Hello and welcome to Signal of Doom, episode 19. I'm Dave. I'm here with my main man, Stu. Stu, how are you?
I'm good, Dave. It's been a long week, though. How about you?
It's been a long and exciting week, man.
Oh,
I feel like we crushed it last episode. I feel like we're hitting homers out of the park. People are emailing in. Controversy has been the byword. And I feel like I've been riding the waves, man,
It's been a busy week with emails and messages.
I mean, on top of doing the normal show notes and covering the news as Lois likes to do, I've also having, you know, I feel like I'm on 60 Minutes. You know, I'm having to, like, I've got people coming left, right and centre at me. You know, I'm all over the place. I'm on Johnny Cash. I'm here. I'm there.
I want to apologise for the Johnny Cash thing.
Johnny Cash. We're mighty proud of that ragged off flag, Stu.
Yeah, I bet you are, Dave.
And people have responded to the Johnny Cash segment last episode, and I'm thinking of making it a regular feature, and maybe we'll just start out with a Pledge of Allegiance before we even start the show. Something along those lines. I don't know, Stu, where are you?
We could, but it wouldn't be so much a we as you, and I would be in the separate room. I would not be here.
Oh, wow. Something like, I'm thinking like Jimi Hendrix, Star Spangled Banner or something just to kick us off.
Oh, please no. Okay, please no.
I'm not actually a big, I don't know, man, but something like that, you know, something like that. Now, Stu, okay, first things first, we've got a big show ahead of us, and I've got plenty of news topics, but I want to cover basically emails and messages people have sent in, mostly regarding our controversy of the week last week, Howard Chaykin thing.
Howard Chaykin story.
Yeah, so I've got a couple of emails from Fist of Conchu people, and we've got a message over there that you're going to read out. I'll read out the first two emails that I've got, Stu, from Fist of Conchu. The first one comes from a long-time listener and big friend of the show, Connor Stevens, over at Fist of Conchu, and he messaged me, and obviously I cleared it with him to read this out, and this is in regards to that Howard Chaykin controversy of last week. And it's called the Divided States of Asteria, Stu. I did a bit of research. Remember how we were like, is it called Divided States of America or Divided States of Asteria?
Yeah.
It's called Divided States of Asteria.
I'm guessing this is the second run and the first one was Divided States of America? Or?
No idea, mate. I don't think so. I think it's just, I don't know, but I think this is an original one-off series he's doing. So anyway,
sure, okay.
Anyway, whatever. So this is from Connor. We're chatting and he goes into it. I don't mean to interrupt your night too much, but just came in to drop a line about the Howard Chaykin controversy. Not so much the cover itself, which you guys covered quite well, thanks, but more so the transgender sex worker. And I've been in the community for a while, not transgender myself, however, so of course I don't blame you guys for not knowing. Just dropping the line here to say that the reason it stirred up controversy was just because it was such a poor representation of transgender peoples. Chaykin has presented poor representation and little care with handling trans characters, often referring to them as chicks with dicks in that issue of Asteria, which is one of the most derogatory names a trans woman could be called. So when the attack happened, the reader knew it wasn't being written to present his view of dystopia. It was just to cause controversy with little regard to actual representation. And that's so damaging because representation for trans people are so little, being a minority in society, that every presentation of themselves in any media is important to establishing their identity. Even a one-off trans character in a sea of comics with no representation becomes a massive part of establishing that identity. And Chaykin damaged that by displaying this false representation of trans people under the guise of being anti-PC and supporting the left. Chaykin didn't shoe them in as real people, just gross objects that gross men whore out as chicks with dicks, then trying to improve that by showing suffering of an attack, but that still just perpetuates the situation. I didn't mean to send wall that large. And I agree with you on book censorship. I mean, we've seen Saga be banned and attempted banned and censored in some places. Saga, but just wanted to clear the air on Chaykin and trans representation. Smiley face. Which, I mean, that's an incredibly good, well-written response.
It is from Connor. And I mean, it's great to hear.
Yeah,
exactly. People are standing up for this kind of thing.
Yeah.
I mean, we just can't get away with casual attitudes towards minorities.
I thought you were going to say towards sex, because I'm certainly guilty of it. But,
yeah, you are.
I struggle to have anything more than a casual attitude towards sex. But
hi, kids.
Oh, come on. You're like, it's PG. I mean, they've got to learn about the birds and the bees at some point, Stu.
You casually, know? Yeah.
Or the bees and the bees, even. Or the birds and the birds.
Sure. Not sure that analogy works, right? But
whatever. Okay. Whatever. But anyway, I like his email and I like his nuance. I don't have much more to say. I actually think it's one of the situations where he's explained himself really well. I don't know if we need to double down.
Absolutely.
And then I've got another one as well from Rebecca, who's really a good friend of the show and also from Fist of Contra and stuff. And she messaged me on Signal of Doom message book. On Facebook, or message book, I guess some people might call it Facebook. Is it better
now? People would call it Facebook.
Facebook? I've called it the YouTube before. I've been that old guy who's called it, is it on the YouTube? I've done that before in my life.
Okay. He's not actually this old. He's not actually that old. He just sounds like it sometimes.
I want to remind people as well, if they do want to, write in, they can always message either the Signal of Doom Facebook page or they can email the signalofdoom@gmail.com email. Either one. It all comes to us. Anyway, so here's Rebecca, who weighed in as well. On the Shaken controversy, there's definitely a danger of judging based on Bleeding Cool, a site which delights in stoking the fires of outrage on all sides and getting as many articles out of it as possible. I just want to say, editorialise, I so agree with her on that point.
Oh, yeah, there's a lot of clickbait.
Bleeding Cool is just, I mean...
There's a lot of clickbait.
Oh, it's ridiculous. But they make mountains out of molehills, so that when they actually do get a real controversy, they've pitched it up so much on these minor topics. Anyway, turning back to Rebecca's message, I think we can all agree on the number four cover, but I think we should all be able to agree on him using phrases like New York in issue one. That's pretty hardcore. Talking about female Muslim suicide bombers and depicting trans men as a sexual fantasy where men deciding sleeping with one might make them a bit gay, then carry out violence. And I think Image were totally wrong to give United States of Hysteria a Pride variant cover. I agree. Well, I don't know why they would have done that. And to not consider that maybe this was an ill-timed release for Pride Month. I wouldn't argue for censorship. I firmly agree that if you don't like it, don't buy it. But Shaken's essay in the back of issue one clearly puts out his childish, in my opinion, manifesto that he wants to outrage both the right and left to make a satirical point about outrage. He would argue that the trans woman in United States of Hysteria goes on to get revenge and that the attack is a defining moment. I would argue that repeating victim tropes helps to normalise them and that we should all be trying to do better. Also, regardless of the victim, rape should never, in my also regardless of the victim, rape should never, in my opinion, be shown as a sexual act, but as a violent and aggressive one, since that's what it is. I have no issue with rape and violence being a part of fiction, but I do expect writers to do some research, maybe speak to people affected by it, and to treat sensitively or with any kind of nuance at all that isn't beating a reader over a head with something. I also think that when someone says you offended me, quotes, the first reaction should never be, well, that's your problem. Art is art. Freedom of speech. Blah blah. That's defensiveness and not a defense. That's defensiveness, not a defence, and will never get a good reaction. And I think the difference between Shaken and the Watchmen rape is in depiction.
Yeah,
minority.
Totally agree.
I agree with that too. This is a very well-written email. Minority communities deserve to be represented with nuance if a writer or artist is going to use them in a story. This may mean more research for a writer, but even if you look at how far representation of women has come in the past few decades, it can make a huge difference. I mean, if you want to talk about the dangers of normalising, look how we talk about minority communities. Look at how tabloid media depicts Muslims at the moment and read their stories about how scared they are to just walk down the street minding their own business because of how they've been depicted. I'm no expert. I mean, I'm Jewish and I enjoy Secret Empire. Despite being told by the internet crowd I should be horrified by it. There's a role for cautionary fables that touch on current issues. I so agree with that. I understand why some are hurt by fascist symbolism being used, but personally, as long as what's happening in the story is being treated as a horrific twisting of Cap and he is the clear bad guy in the tale, I want to see how it plays out. How he deals with the horrors of what he's done, and for them to be treated as horrors, as I think they are being. Maybe not with the most delicate of hands, but certainly not with Shaken clumsiness either. That's a very good point she makes. Because this Shaken guy seems like he's just he's blundering through this.
Yeah, he is. Half of the problem is how he's treating this.
He's a bull in a china shop.
Yeah, exactly. It's not necessarily wrong what he's done, it's how he's gone about it.
No, I agree.
I think that's a problem.
Anyway, I don't want to go on and on about it. I'm happy to chat more, and someone who doesn't have a huge deal with the occasional bit of censorship. I just want to say thank you, Rebecca. I actually think that's again, she's raised the bar on emails to this show. And, and yeah. pro-
probably step up your game, people.
And probably this show, though. Even if you and I take a look,
this is definitely a much, much more well thought out version of what this show should be.
I mean, harder that is to achieve, because we were deep in it last. We were deep in it last episode, man, weren't we? Remember, I thought we almost at one point got to the meaning and life of the universe. At one point, I almost stumbled on it, you know. But Rebecca's blowing us away. Anyway, thank you, Rebecca. I really appreciate you writing in, and frankly, both of these guys have just kind of like they've taken their argument and I think argued it really well. Frankly, now Stu. Michael has written in. Michael is such a big... I'm such a big fan of Michael, and he's a long-time listener, and he's a big supporter of the show. He's come in, Stu, the final email, the capper on this tale with, I guess you could say, an alternate opinion, and all opinions are welcome here. Stu, do you want to read this one out?
Yeah, I don't know if it's a completely alternate opinion.
Yeah, it's another email, though.
It's another email with another point of view. So he's got, from Michael... another great podcast. I have to add some.
That's true. Hold on a sec. Hold on a sec. You missed the greetings, Stu, because you might notice how he greets us.
Greetings, Lois and Stu.
I appreciate that, Michael. Anyway, continue.
Here you go, Dave. Embracing the transgender. What's
exactly? What's the problem I am Lois Lane, Stu. We all know that.
Yeah, we love this. All right. I have to add some insight into the Howard Chaykin controversy. The recent divided states of a Hysteria book has been maligned by all people, but have missed the author's actual intent. Which wasn't to spread hatred of Pakistanis or trans people, but instead hatred of the US President Donald Trump. Mm. Here's a statement from Image Comics. Quote, "The purpose of this series is to sound alarms. The Divided States of Hysteria is a comic book about the terrifying future we are headed for if our country remains on its current path. Far from an endorsement of the horrible violence depicted or the ugly language used by many of the characters, Howard's goal is to give us a glimpse into the society crumbling under the weight of ignorance, hatred, and intolerance. It's unsettling to be sure, but it's difficult to convey the horrors of a world gone wrong without also showing what it looks like." End quote. So to summarize, Image Comics and Howard Chaykin believe that the democratically elected president of America is going to cause lynching and mob violence in the streets to minorities. This is atypical of comics. Current creators, rabid Trump hate and delusional fanaticism in most industries. People are expected to keep their political views at home, but in the comic industry, the creators feel the need to preach their virtue signaling in the pages of their comic book, using them as their own soapbox. The situation has gotten so bad that people with conservative or libertarian views mm-hmm. are simply not welcome in the industry. According to the mighty Chuck Dixon... Big fan of the show.
Yeah, big fan of the show. Big fan of the show.
If you're conservative and trying to break into the industry, you're SOL. This line of thought has also been supported by the American news media, which keeps up a 24/7 barrage of Trump hate. At this point, believing the mainstream media on Trump is like trusting J. Jonah Jameson to tell you the truth about Spider-Man.
I love that line. That's a great line.
Yeah, that's well thought out. So when Howard Chaykin makes his Hysteria book, he's merely putting onto paper what the media says is going to happen. Obviously, in reality, there are no trans, Muslim, gay lynch mobs roaming the streets. There are violent masked thugs attacking and censoring people, calling Antifa, and weekly Islamic-inspired terror attacks. But of course, those are not conducive to Mr. Chaykin's fantasy realm, so don't expect him or Image to address the real hate and violence that are occurring. So I believe the hysteria about Hysteria is simply a misunderstanding. Mr. Chaykin attempted to do his best Trump dystopian future, and it simply backfired. Regardless, fuck him and his crappy artwork.
I do want to say I don't like Chaykin's actual artwork, his actual faces. Like, I'm not talking about his deeper meanings, I'm talking about his actual artwork.
Yeah, it's not great. All right, keep up the good work, churn out the podcasts. I'm going to go read some Chuck Dixon Punisher right now.
All right.
And I think you'll want to as well.
That's a great email, man.
It is. It's a well thought out point of view.
Yeah.
That's kind of on the opposite side to what a lot of people have been emailing us about.
It's more in line with what it's parts of it are more in line with what I was saying, but parts of it he's just going in his own direction. And I
think ultimately what he's getting at is the point that we were trying to get through last week, which was just that it is all about the context.
Yeah.
What he was trying to represent wasn't necessarily a bad thing to do. It's a free media. It's his opinion.
Mm.
But putting it on a cover in a comic book store is not the way to go about that.
Yeah, well, I mean, look...
So his execution was poor. Maybe his ideas were valid.
I think... look, I agree with what you're saying to a point. I think what's really becoming clear here is I think even inside the comic, it sounds like he's blundering around. Like, forget about the cover.
Exactly. I mean, if he was doing this well and inside the comic was brilliant and it was a really great satirical piece, maybe there wouldn't be this controversy.
I can think of the
cover would be annoying, but...
Like, Alan Moore, V for Vendetta, is a story of basically a terrorist.
Yeah.
Okay. Absolutely. And it's very nuanced. And it's
incredibly well done.
It's incredibly well done. Like, the execution that Alan Moore had, that was peak Alan Moore, like, fucking throwing threes from, like, you know, incredible parts of the court. It feels with Shaken like maybe, I'll be honest, maybe this is an old-timer who's kind of lost some edge, just blundering through. It's kind of, it's like he's trying to cause a disturbance in the force and generate like some controversy.
He's trying to create his own relevance.
Yeah. Yeah.
He's losing it at this point, so he's trying to create some controversy to get his name out there.
Yeah. Yeah.
Try to create some work for him in the future.
I don't know. I mean, I've never been a huge fan of the guy anyway. But I respect him for what he's done because he is very, you know, high sort of...
He's a well-respected
guy. Well-respected guy. American flags considered a sort of icon of the movement and stuff. But, I don't know. Nothing I hear about this comic actually... Forget all about the philosophical opinions we've voiced and all the different points of view. None of this is making me think, Jesus Christ, I need this comic in my life.
No, I mean, I'd be interested to go back and read some of his other stuff.
Oh, he's got some good stuff.
That's been highly regarded.
I've read a bit of American Flag. It's pretty good for its time. You can see why it's kind of like you go back and maybe watch some classic movies of the 70s, and although they're dated, you can see their power. I'm talking about some of the movies that are a tear down from the all-time classics.
Yeah,
do you know what I mean? You got to go down that second level. He's a good creator, but, I mean, he has been swinging pretty freely in the last few years and hasn't been connecting as well as I would have thought, you know.
Yeah.
But anyway, I mean, look, guys, this is a bit like an episode of 60 Minutes. We've been bouncing back and forth now. I'm kind of exhausted on the topic. Stu, have you got any other tidbits? Because I sort of don't care anymore.
No, look, if it comes back up, if this creates another controversy, we will cover it, obviously.
I think it, Stu, sadly, I think it did. There was more controversy about another cover. It's the same stuff, though. It's like more. It's more of the same.
Yeah, if it's more of the same.
It's more of the same, Stu.
I think we've said our piece.
I think we've said our piece. But thank you to everyone. Thank you to Rebecca. Thank you to Michael. And thank you to Connor for writing in. We really appreciate it.
Absolutely.
And, Stu, we've got another email here. And this is an email that I believe you can read out because this email vindicates me in such a major way.
Yeah, it does. So thanks to Tom Reeves for sending this in.
Thank you, Tom. Thank you to Tom for sending this in.
Stu, so happy.
You might want to read this one out. Stu, you should have seen my face when this email was received. I looked at it on Signal of Doom.
I thought you'd love this.
I was like a Cheshire cat.
So I should point out, Tom and I have known each other for a good 15 years.
I thought this is an impartial email, Stu. I felt this is very impartial. This is the fact that you know him is a coincidence, nothing more.
Oh, okay. Well, let's not read into it any further then. Hey guys, by far the most entertaining part of your podcast is when Dave refuses to back down on a point that has completely transgressed from the main point of what you were talking about.
Mm.
For this purpose, I think Dave should be permitted to do more hypotheticals.
Yes!
Kind regards, Tom. Thanks,
Tom. You couldn't have said it better.
You really could have.
It's like I almost could have written this email myself because I love a hypothetical, Stu.
I know you love a hypothetical.
Going down the rabbit hole of my hypotheticals is where some of the genius occurs. You know what I'm saying? It's where the magic is made.
Yep. We have differing opinions on genius and magic, but yes.
Okay. Now, that actually, believe it or not, covers mailbox for this week, Stu. I mean, my God. We almost need an intern to cover this level of mail.
I know. This is getting it's getting up there, right?
But we appreciate it very highly. Now, Stu, turning away from last week and let's turn it into this week and the future. Stu, the first thing that I want to talk about is the Spider-Man box office numbers. He had a $256 million worldwide opening. Okay.
Fantastic.
The numbers in America were strong too. I believe it was the second highest after the original Spider-Man.
That sounds right.
Yep. And that's a great result.
Which is because in America, Spider-Man's been getting diminishing returns every single movie.
Every single opening box office has had diminishing returns, I believe, since Spider-Man 2. In the US. In the US.
Yeah.
Spider-Man 3 this will probably beat it, was the highest money maker of the whole franchise.
Internationally, yeah.
Yeah, internationally,
absolutely.
Made an enormous amount of money.
Has the legs to beat that.
Oh, I think so, too. I think so. And I factor in high ticket prices as well, the Marvel demand, Good critical reviews, good Metacritic score.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, that movie, Spider-Man 3, did it with pretty average reviews at the time.
Yeah, definitely.
So, I mean, there's every chance that this movie is going to become the best Spider-Man movie.
Yeah, and let's not forget, Sony are picking up all the box office take from this. We covered that in a previous show.
Which is great. I am so all for Sony getting as much money as they can, because the more they get, the more likely other companies are to deal with Marvel.
Very true. It's
beneficial for both sides.
And would you agree with me? This is just I've been tossing this around in my head. The positive buzz on Spider-Man. There has been some other stuff we'll cover later in the show, but the positive buzz, the positive box office, I think this makes the marriage between Sony and Marvel on the Spider properties even more appealing. And we might see some of these solo spin-off movies have some Marvel involvement. I don't believe it's impossible.
But look, it's not impossible. At this stage,
it's a pretty sweet marriage right now.
It is. Mm. I mean, there's obviously two sides to the coin. The better it is, I feel like the more confident Sony will be to step out on its own and
get all the box office themselves,
get everything, or even merch rights.
Yeah. Good point.
But look, I'm hoping everyone makes a lot of money. Everyone's very happy, and they keep working together because
exactly. And this will mean so much.
It was fantastic seeing Iron Man and Spider-Man on the same screen.
Agreed. And kids will be picking up the Spider-Man merchandise, which is, as we know, a huge part of what keeps these films ticking.
Yeah, and it gets more people into comic books. It gets more people into this industry.
That's true.
It's all good news.
I mean, I just think of the kids. I think of, like, one of my colleagues at work. Her kid went and saw Spider-Man. Absolutely loved it. And he's a Spider-Man fan. But I believe he's been so poorly served over the last couple of years in terms of live action. And then for this to come back on, it should mean such a lot. And, I mean, I want to point this out. This is showing the strength of the superhero genre. This and Wonder Woman are showing the strength of the superhero genre in an era where franchises such as Transformers and Pirates are showing weakenings.
Yeah, I mean, 12 months ago, people were saying this comic book bubble is going to burst.
It's not about to burst.
And right it's pushing through.
Stu, I'm telling you, it's got another 4 years solid before they're even going to run into problems. It's not showing any signs of fatigue.
Look, I think at this point, if DC gets the next couple of movies right,
they're
unstoppable.
Yeah.
If Justice League goes well and the Batman can pull through, they'll be unstoppable.
Yeah.
Marvel at this point is unstoppable.
Yeah. That's what I'm saying. Like, when I say 4 years, I'm talking 4 years of gold.
Yeah.
Like, you know, like, really. And it's fascinating. And I want to bring up something, Stu. This is an item I've got down here. I want to talk about the Spider-Man reboot issue, because this is something that I've heard on a few podcasts. And it's funny how sometimes the audience that loves these products is the quickest to turn upon themselves. Now, I've heard it from various commentators, Stu, including people I highly respect and regard, and their opinions are their own, like David Hopkins over at Hideous Energy. I'm a big fan of the guy's work, okay? And he enjoyed the movie, got an 8 out of 10. But him and others, I've heard them go on and on about reboot fatigue. Now, I want to say this for the record. I firmly believe there was... Look, Amazing Spider-Man 1 and 2 had many things going for them. Andrew Garfield was a good Spider-Man. But this was the medicine that the franchise needed to take. They needed to cast younger. They needed to merge with Marvel. All these things needed to happen, and it meant a recast was inevitable and needed.
Yeah. I think there's obviously going to be problems with retelling an origin story...
Yeah.
Especially one as famous as this.
Yeah.
Like we said last week, this is probably number two to Batman.
Yeah, I would agree. I think this is, outside of Batman, I think this is probably the most iconic origin story there is. And so simple, bitten by a radioactive spider.
Yeah, everybody knows that Spider-Man was bitten by a radioactive spider.
Yeah.
And most people could tell you who Uncle Ben is and how that transforms.
Now, in this movie, correct me if I'm wrong, was the spider mentioned and was Uncle Ben mentioned? Did the spider get mentioned in an off-camera moment, didn't it?
When he was talking to Ned was asking him how he got his powers and what happened.
I thought that was the most graceful way.
So that was well done, but there was zero Uncle Ben.
Mentioned, yeah.
And in fact, Robert Downey Jr. almost took up the Uncle Ben role of the older mentor.
He definitely took a sort of father figure approach.
Yeah, the older mentor role.
Yeah. Now, I just find it so fascinating, Stu, that people who think this is a good movie feel it had significant problems. I can't see them, and I can't see any negative in the deal with Marvel and Sony. I mean, are these people blind?
I mean, I've only come across one problem, which was the whole timeline issue.
Yeah, but that's so...
That we spoke about.
That's so...
Up until now, Marvel has been pretty dead set with their timeline.
True.
Movies are all acting in real time. When it comes out in 2017, the year in the movie is 2017.
Mm-hmm. With one exception, apparently, Guardians 2 or something.
Guardians 2, but they actually told you it was a jump of 34 years.
Got it.
Pushed it in 2014, I think it is.
Right. Yeah, they consciously did it.
Yeah, they actually made a note of this is not appearing in this year.
Got it. Okay.
So, I mean, that was the only movie that doesn't fit in with that chronology until this.
Whereas this one, as I think we have explained before, we've definitely done it off microphone. We were talking about how him coming... Spoilers, kids. Him coming to the facility at the end... That facility is a facility that they went to at the end of Age of Ultron, if I'm right in saying.
Yeah, there's a bit of confusion as to when the...
Why would Tony... New York
State...
Yeah.
...facility, Avengers facility, became the headquarters.
And if you think about it, that was... when at the end of Age of Ultron was clearly before Civil War, whereas Spider-Man Homecoming is set at least after the event where he has the fight at the airport, at least...
Yeah, I mean, so there's been conjecture as to, is the 8 years flash forward a mistake?
Right.
Could it be six?
Okay.
And the other one, which I think makes more sense, is that basically all of Phase 1 of Marvel more or less happened within the same year.
I heard that, get this.
If you run with that theory, that all of Phase 1 happened
one year. Which I think makes sense. I heard that get this, Thor, like Iron Man maybe 2... and another movie that I can't remember off the top of my head, were all the same week. All those movies were the same week.
The first Captain America.
First Captain America.
All happened within a month.
That's nutty.
Yes.
Yeah. But in a sense, it makes sense because they were all directly leading into the Avengers, and it was a fairly compressed timeline.
Well, yeah, and when we say the first Captain America, it's like the last 2% of
the
movie. Yeah,
the bit where he wakes up and he goes to Times Square.
That's literally all he says, but...
I've got no problems with that. Like, I mean, it's an action-packed week, but it kind of makes sense with how everything was... They were getting all the pieces into order for the Avengers.
Yeah, it just seems like a weird way to announce that was the timeline.
I don't really care, to be honest. Like, none of this keeps me up at night because, A, it's fantasy, and, well, I mean, and fiddling around with a timeline at a certain point becomes, like, train spotting to me. Like, it's...
True, but I also think it's one of the few... really strong points that Marvel...
I thought you were going to say few pleasures I have in life. And I was going to say, really, Stu?
It's one of the few things that Marvel's done really well that other franchises haven't looked at all.
Yeah.
And you do see people online sort of like arguing about whether this movie's first, whether this movie's first. And
those guys haven't got much going on, though.
No, but with Marvel, they haven't been able to do it. It's been a pretty clear cut. This happens.
In this one, you could do it. Even I can piece it together that Spider-Man seemed to have some issues with the timeline.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I mean, but guess what, kids? I don't fucking care that much. Like, a lot of...
To be honest, if that's the only downside...
If that's the only downside, that's nothing.
That's nothing. Because if you haven't seen every other Marvel movie, you wouldn't even notice.
Yeah, you can walk in. I guarantee you my mother could walk in, watch this movie and enjoy it.
Like, pretty much 90% of people that walk on the street would see this movie.
Isn't that the point of what we are trying to get going here?
It is such a minority that would figure out that there's a problem.
Yeah. Now, I just find it really fascinating that the hardcore audience that bothers to do podcasts seem to have such an issue with the reboot. I just can't understand it. Do they not understand this is business? This is a business.
I mean, a lot of it's contractually forced as well. Same as Fantastic Four. Every time they do a new Fantastic Four reboot, they've got to show the origins.
I don't know. I just feel like this movie, like people saying they have significant concerns. What's your big concern? Like one guy online was like, Rob Meyer Burnett, a guy I appreciate on Collider. He's well respected. I like him a lot. He had massive concerns about Tony going, what Tony did was unacceptable. Tony is arrogant. Tony is flawed. You know, absolutely. Tony, for all his genius, is quite a flawed character at the heart of it.
As like, pretty much every Marvel character is, which is what I love.
Robert Downey Jr.'s performance has always relied on this flawed, arrogant sort of genius. Like, it's in every single Iron Man movie. It's in all the Avengers movies.
Absolutely.
Why would he be a perfect father figure?
His greatest comic book run of all time, Demon in a Bottle, runs entirely
on... And I would also put up their Matt Fraction's run as well, very similar style run. Look... If Tony had come on screen, I mean, this perfect, benevolent, godlike father to Peter, who had no sort of qualms and was just perfect, that wouldn't be the Tony, you know?
No, exactly.
Tony's always going to be a bit sort of, he's damaged goods himself.
I mean, that's why he doesn't get on with Cap all the time.
Yeah, yeah. I just,
because he's so opinionated and brash.
Yeah, he's, yeah.
Arrogant. That
he's arrogant. There's an arrogance to his genius, you know?
I mean, and some of it's deserved, and yeah, probably so.
He's, yeah, he's proven he can do it. He can walk the talk.
Yeah.
And, like, I'm just saying that's part of his character. And I felt that it was conveyed well. And, I mean, Happy was that literally the happy medium between the two.
Exactly. I really love
Happy. I just can't understand how that's being brought up as a negative, because that, I thought, portrayal was done very well.
Yeah, no, I agree with you.
I'm going to agree to disagree. I mean, some of those people who've made these comments are people I highly respect, and at the end of the day, everyone's entitled to their own opinion. But I want us on the Signal to be showing loud and clear. It got a 9.5, and it's blaring up into the heavens at 9.5. You know what I'm saying?
It's a great movie.
Yeah. Now, Stu, I want to talk about a cut Marissa Tomei scene. Now, you know I love Marissa Tomei. I mean, I have a crush on Marissa Tomei since the 90s. I date her in a heartbeat. Now, she apparently had a scene where she was a bit upset that it was cut. Apparently, the way it was described is Peter sees Aunt May apparently rescue somebody, I don't know what from a mugging or something like that, and she basically puts herself at risk, rescues this person. Peter sees it, she keeps it secret, so there's kind of a secret in the household. Like, she comes in kind of heart a flutter, and he's like, is anything up, May? And she's like, no, it's all okay. But she's actually put herself at risk, like, I think defending you know, someone being mugged or something. For me, a nice character moment. I mean, I guess the film was pretty packed, but I wouldn't have thought that would have gone astray. Like, Marissa had to do a lot with the tiny amount of scenes she was given, you know?
Yes and no. I think it kind of leads into that idea that they wanted to give Marissa Tomei a bigger role and give her powers, yeah, and all the rest of it, which I don't like.
Oh, I don't like the idea about Marissa Tomei having powers. I don't think anyone likes that idea, apart from Marissa Tomei said it was maybe a good idea. Who wants to see Aunt May having powers?
Marissa Tomei talking about it, this scene that was cut that she wanted in.
Yeah. There's a lot of scenes are done.
To be honest, I don't think this adds anything.
No.
It actually takes away from the whole Aunt May is this kind, sweet lady that just helps.
But she did
never
help.
Never violent, never angry.
Yeah. But she's a bit more feisty. The Marissa performance has got a little bit more Italian flavour to it.
That's true, but I
don't know. I just
if you keep doing that way, you're going to stray away from the May.
Yeah. I tell you, I hear you. I hear you. I love Aunt May. I mean, who doesn't love Aunt May? And I really liked the older lady who performed her in the original Spider-Man.
Mm.
She was touching my heart. And
so that was brilliant. The whole, when no one was looking, she hits the bad guy with her umbrella.
Yeah.
That's the perfect kind of level of defiance.
Marissa in this, like at the end where she sees him as Spider-Man, I like that performance too. It's in keeping with kind of more ultimate Spider-Man.
Yeah, but I tell you what, if you haven't seen the movie.
Oh, well, spoilers, kids. Hey, right in. You know, you might not get read out. But an email will be written that I won't read out. If you bother to complain. Yeah, if you bother to complain about spoilers, don't come to see
I'll read anything, Finn.
Yeah.
Read out a complaint.
I might still read it. But I just feel like the spoiler culture has gotten fucking nuts. Like, hey, guess what, kids? You're bothering to listen to Dave and Stu talk on Signal of Doom, you know, delving deep into a movie. I hope you've seen it by now. If not, go watch it. Like, do yourself a favour. What are you?
I don't know.
You know,
I mean, we're still a week out. It's still a new thing.
These kids today, Stu, I'm just in that mood today where I've
just only won 2 weeks. That's
okay. Have 2 weeks.
2 weeks. All right. Then you can spoil away.
Yeah, Peter Parker, Spider-Man, kid, spoiler. Jesus. you know what I mean? Like, oh my God, we can't possibly offend them. Like, you know, like Aunt Maisie's aunt. Well, at what level are we allowed? Frank Castle's Punisher. Oh my God, the spoilers just don't stop. Like, you know, it's just like, give me a break.
Tom, your email brings this on.
Hypothetical, Stu, my strength. So we've already discussed the reboot issue. I had something more to say about Marissa Tomei, but basically I think it boiled down to me saying I thought she was super attractive. So I guess we could probably...
I'm pretty sure that's just in every run sheet I've seen.
Probably gloss over that part. Oh, yeah, no, I know what I was going to say. I tell you who I couldn't stand as Aunt May, Sally Fields. I thought she was terrible in Amazing Spider-Man, and I'll tell you the part, like, she was okay. She was very generic, like generic, you know, like she wasn't anything special. I like Martin Sheen as an actor. I thought he was okay as Uncle Ben, but you know the part that really got me, it was when Aunt May was working at the hospital in Amazing Spider-Man 2, and then the power went off and it came back on and she starts shouting like she's running the hospital. And I'm like, she's literally like the lowest rung on the hospital ladder. Why is Aunt May suddenly in charge of telling people what to do? It annoyed me in the cinema. I just found her before. I like Sally Fields as a personality, but I just felt she just didn't have the Aunt May kind of performance at all.
See, I didn't mind her performance, but it wasn't Aunt May.
Yeah, it was like something.
That wasn't a character that I know.
Yeah, I mean, I like Sally Fields, but I just...
Sally Fields playing
yes,
the nurse.
Yeah. What did you think of Martin Sheen? Because I like Martin Sheen. I thought he was okay, actually.
Yeah, I didn't mind it.
Yeah, he played a steady Uncle Ben figure, you know.
I mean, I think everything with The Amazing Spider-Man run, those two movies, was... Everything was okay. Nothing was amazing.
It was interesting.
There were no casting choices that I was like, yes, that's my dream cast right there.
Yeah. They got... Something I will say, I certainly believe those movies aren't the most terrible movies of all time. They got a bad rap on them because they basically Amazing Spider-Man 2 disappointed the box office, and they were outshadowed by Avengers movies and stuff coming out at the same time. They were suffering by comparison to a very burgeoning Marvel franchise, I felt.
I mean, look, neither of them were good movies.
No, they were interesting. But
they were fine, but...
This is my point. I'm so much happier about Spider-Man Homecoming. Like, Spider-Man Homecoming absolutely. Is such a home run compared to those... I would call those doubles or singles. Like, they got to one base or second base, at best. Whereas Spider-Man Homecoming, guess what, is a home fucking run. It is.
Yeah, like, when you cast someone like Tom Holland, I absolutely love that cast.
He's fantastic. Now, Stu, have I brought this up already about some speculation, which I actually find really interesting. Mm-hmm. Cindy from the Decathlon team. Is the Decathlon team the math team? Whatever team they have in Spider-Man Homecoming, whatever competition they've got going on? Is it that team? What's Decathlon? I thought Decathlon was, like, sport.
Yeah, this is an academic decathlon.
Okay. Okay. Well, yeah. Thanks, Stu. I never went in one. Okay. I didn't actually go into sports decathlons either.
Did you do actual decathlons?
Yeah, Stu. No, so apparently some speculation, which I found really interesting. The character in the comics, Cindy Moonstew, a.k.a. Silk, there's a character called Cindy in the decathlon team. It's been getting missed up, but she's an Asian girl. She says a few lines here and there.
Yeah.
She's reasonably attractive. She gave a good performance from what little she had to work with. There's a rumor that is Cindy Moon, who is Silk, who basically in the comics, just to break it down for listeners out there, in like Amazing Spider-Man reboot from let's say 2015-ish around there, basically Cindy Moon is an Asian student who's there with Peter Parker, and after the spider bites Parker, it also bites her. Okay, same powers pretty much, everything the same, but Ezekiel, the character which we covered in last week's JMS run, in this version of the story, he actually talks her into abandoning her family and going to live in like a bunker for 10 years. Mm. And then I recommend this Silk comic. It's quite good. She comes out of the bunker with all the powers. She's kind of got a weird attraction to Peter as well. They've got like a weird physical attraction just due to pheromones or something. And it's a really interesting... I read probably the first 10 or 15 issues. I was pretty heavily into it. The reason I stopped reading was merely just this vast amount of comics that come out. I just got lost in the shuffle. But it was a really interesting run, and she's still around. She was used in Spider-Verse, and it was a surprise hit. So there's speculation that Cindy, an Asian student, young, at Peter's age, was also bitten by the spider but not showing her powers. Stu, your thoughts? Do you think there's anything that'll be explored?
Oh, look, it could well be the same character, but I think it's more likely just a little Easter egg. That
just an Easter egg.
Threw in.
We need
to fill a team. Let's look for people that are notable characters from Spider-Man comics that we can just fill this team with.
I've got a question for you. Why was the character of Ned not Genki, who is, like, Genki's the ultimate, the sort of, like, let's face it, he's the fat kid who helps out Miles Morales, okay? Yeah. Everything about Genki is Ned. Why wouldn't you just call him Genki?
I don't know. It could be a nickname that we figure out in the next movie. Like, it may well be the same character, but we just haven't gotten around to that nickname.
But you know who I feel for? The creators. Like, can you imagine if you created, like, I guess it's Bendis. He's worth a fortune. But I mean, I don't know. You've created a character that the movie then takes everything and adjusts the name. You know?
Well, I mean, Bendis is getting, like, credit for this movie. Like, he's in the...
Is he?
He's in the credits. He's got...
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm just bringing it up. I mean, I just bring it up more so to say, like, it seemed a weird choice to me. I wonder what the legal ramifications are. Like, if you've got a character that you... Say you've created Green Lantern, okay?
Mm-hmm.
in, and then they do Justice League, and everything is Green Lantern except they change the name, and they go, "Oh yeah, that's not Hal Jordan. That's like, you know, something else, Hal Smith."
Well, in the same way that like Bob Kane gets a credit on every Batman film,
yeah,
I think it's the same idea. If you created Green Lantern, then,
but okay, I'll get a bit more complicated. Okay,
but I also think that if it's a running comic now, so if a writer comes along, like a Dan Slott kind of writer,
yeah,
and invents a brand new character,
for example, Silk.
Well, yeah, that's in Spider-Man.
Yeah, he gets rights to that. He gets rights to that. They get paid for using that character.
Yeah, but the movie rights cover everything. It's not up to when they sold the rights.
Oh no, no, I'm talking about I'm talking about the creator getting a payment, not anything else. So what I'm saying is,
I don't know if they get a payment. I think they just get a special thanks, not in the credits.
I know with DC. I know with DC. I know this from talking to a couple of creators and stuff. That if you say for example you've created a good example would be Connor Hawke, okay, who's the Green Arrow after Oliver Queen.
Yep,
he turned up in an episode of Arrow. Now, for that appearance, that creator, if he's officially recognised as created by whoever created him, it wasn't Marv Wolfman, but someone like Marv Wolfman, you know, they get a residual payment for the use of that character. So, for example, it's a big thing for older creators. Like, Arrow is famous for just churning out lots of characters and throwing them into the Arrow show.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, a lot of those characters, there's a complicated process at DC that... that creator will see a payment for their usage in the show. For example, like Killer Frost, you know, the character, is it Caitlin? I'm not sure if his name's Caitlin. It's something like that in Arrow. Or in Flash, sorry. In Flash, you know you know the chick who was with Firestorm, etc.? Yeah, like stuff like that. Like there's some, I don't know what it's anything like at all, what the stories at Marvel, but it's interesting.
I'm sure they've got an agreement worked out. I'm sure that if.
But gee, I'd be rewarded if I created a character like Genki. And then I see that character, everything, except they just changed the name. I mean, you can see the potential problems. You can see, like, a potential lawsuit. I mean,
look, in this case, it was done with Marvel. Marvel signed off on everything. So, I mean, Marvel wouldn't intentionally piss off their own creators.
But, okay, but the point remains that that's what happened. They didn't call him Genki. But you're right. You're saying on the back end they may have paid Bendis anyway.
Well, yeah, exactly. That's what I'm saying.
Fair enough, yeah.
We have no idea that he hasn't been paid for this.
No, we don't.
Because the name's changed.
Lois is getting a little eager over here, maybe.
I think you're making a mountain out of a molehill.
Well, sometimes, Stu, that you've got to be fearless when you report.
It's the same as there was no MJ, but we had a Michelle character.
Oh, yeah, very true. That's an interesting one because, I mean, again, spoilers, kids, if you haven't seen the movie. But, like, a lot of people, because apparently Feige came out with, like, oh, that's not MJ. She's not Mary Jane Watson. But, like, that's not Mary Jane Watson. This is a new character, Michelle. I'm like, come on. It's she's going to be your MJ moving forward, which I've got zero problems with. I don't really understand the consternation. Sure. Well, you know she's going to be called MJ. She said that herself. She goes, I'm Michelle. People call me MJ. My friends call me MJ. How is that not MJ? That's the character in this universe.
The name of the character. That's not the character.
I get it, but what an interesting point. Like, if she's going to be a love interest for Spider-Man called MJ, I've got no problems with it, dude. They can run their own way. I just wonder how that works out with creator rights. Like, that is difficult because what are you called? Oh, they call me MJ. Oh, but that's not MJ. That's just a coincidence that there's a Mary Jane Watson called MJ in Spider-Man comics. No, it's not, dude. It's a nod and a wink to the audience. Yeah. How does that work out on the back end? I'd love to know. Because potentially that could be you could see a lawsuit over that kind of thing. This has happened in comics, dude, like where the corporate, they do these things where they're like, oh, we're not going to give you this payment because that character's not exactly the same as the character you created. But it's in the natural evolution.
At the end of the day, it's going to come down to whether they created the name or they created the character. Because they used the name, they did not use the character.
True. Very good point. Yeah.
Nothing about that Michelle. Mary Jane Watson.
At no point were you really thinking
the likeness. Like,
yeah.
The
fact nothing. That nothing.
Female
nothing.
Is about the only thing that lines up.
I'd agree. Wasn't even a love interest for Peter, really.
And look, MJ isn't exactly an uncommon name. I mean, there are plenty of MJs throughout history.
Yeah. Michael Jackson.
Michael Jordan.
Yeah. Michael Jordan. Yeah.
Mary Jane. Like, there's a bunch of MJs.
Yeah. True. Oh, look, I get it, Stu, but that's a very convenient argument. But then think about it for a second. In terms of the Spider-Man franchise, MJ is a loaded term. That's my point. Okay.
Well, yeah, absolutely. But every comic book movie
it's not a coincidence.
Has little Easter eggs.
Yeah, yeah.
And
yeah.
you can't expect a full payment when they're on screen for 2 seconds in an Easter egg.
I don't know. I don't know if you can or not.
Do you think the creator of Mandarin got a payment for Iron Man 1?
Probably, yeah.
Even though the Mandarin character wasn't in that movie, he was just in the back of the car.
Oh, no, sorry. In Iron Man 1, no, but maybe in Iron Man 3, I don't know.
But there was an Easter egg where the Mandarin was
You'd be surprised. These payments aren't huge, by the way. A lot of these deals are not particularly advantageous to creators. A lot of them are very much like... A lot of these deals, Stu, and this is the sad part about comics, a lot of these payments is acceptance of not going any further, saying you're entitled to more share of this character. They give you a piecemeal payment to basically appease you. So that you don't challenge for greater rights and a greater financial stake. It's quite a murky corporate landscape.
Yeah, and a lot of this stuff, though, it's not worth it.
Yeah, but...
Like when you see the Infinity Gauntlet in 4-1, do you get payments if you created the Infinity Gauntlet? Because that's a major plot
point. Jim Starlin should be getting major payments for he created
for Infinity War.
Fuck
absolutely.
Yeah, dude!
But
dude,
leading up to it,
do you
want to
hear a sad
about Infinity?
Do you want to hear a sad comment?
Talking about
yeah,
gauntlets, like that's all stuff that he created. Jim Starlin created.
Yeah. Guess what? I saw Jim Starlin, a very respected creator. Okay, and he should be getting a sizable payment for the Infinity Gauntlet because he created that series and that trilogy, and they're using it in billion-dollar movies. I saw him do a. Tweet, he tweeted out, it was either Suicide Squad or it may have been Suicide Squad or it might have been Batman Superman. It was one of the two. He got more payment from an appearance of a very minor character than he's received from Marvel for anything, any of the movies. So
to date or?
Yeah, yeah. He actually said, now I'll go watch the movie.
Well, see, yeah, that makes sense because they're not actually using any characters he's created. They've
Thanos?
Him in his Easter
Thanos.
And-
Thanos. They've used Thanos? Dude, how can you say that, like, he's not entitled to a decent financial share?
I never said that. You're putting words in my mouth and trying to make that up a molehill again.
No, I'm just bringing the point forward that you can't overemphasize just this Hollywood creative accounting, dude, is not favorable at all to creators. They are ripped off here. The creators who built these things are ripped off badly, okay, in comparison to what these movies take. Like, at the end of the day, I get it, it's business, dude. I get that's the way the corporate world works, but it's not a fair model at all. And for Jim Starlin, who Thanos has been in multiple movies, no matter how brief, his name has been all over it. We've heard about the Infinity Stones, like, infinite times, it feels like. For him to say that he got... It was a character like... It might not have been Boomerang, but it's a character the equivalent of Boomerang. You know, it's a very minor character in Suicide Squad. The appearance of that character from DC, from Warners, gave him more money in his pocket than anything... he has gained from all the Marvel movies, which I think is an absolute shameful tragedy. Like, that's from the horse's mouth, dude. You know?
Well, yeah, but if you've got a major character running through the entire movie, that's very different to a two-minute Easter egg.
The character that he's talking about was a minor character. Dude, it may have been Diablo. It was Diablo or Boomerang or someone like
okay,
that.
So both those characters
minor.
Ran through the entire movie and were part of the Suicide Squad. They're on the cover of the poster.
But what about Thanos? Thanos
has never been on a poster. Thanos has never appeared for more than 2 minutes in his run.
Well, I don't know. What about the Infinity Gauntlet? We've heard about Infinity Stones through so many of these Marvel movies. Again,
it's a name. Like, he doesn't invent the name.
He did, I think. The Infinity Gauntlet was...
He didn't invent the words Infinity and Gauntlet.
But he invented, like, Jim Starlin we're talking about, invented the whole story of the Infinity Gauntlet. The whole cosmic, you know the cosmic thing you go on about.
Dave, you and I are allowed to talk about Iron Man without paying the creator of Iron Man.
Yeah.
So are the movies. You're allowed to say the name without having to pay the creator.
Yeah, but they
there
appeared.
There is a limited amount of use that you're allowed to anything, even
they,
if it's owned by someone
they appeared,
else.
Though. They appeared, though. Like, the Infinity Stones and stuff have appeared in multiple movies.
True. You sampled a bit of Johnny Cash last episode. You didn't pay
famously.
Him.
True.
There is an amount of use you're allowed.
Yeah.
Within reason.
But I'm not
use.
But may I say this? I'm not monetizing
it
at all.
It doesn't matter.
I'm not monetizing.
It doesn't matter.
I don't
That's
know.
It's not part of the argument.
Well, it's
you're
part of the argument for me.
Reasonable use of any kind of material. As long as it's within a range.
I believe, though, that, like...
You're allowed to show 5 minutes of Game of Thrones every week on YouTube if you want to.
Yeah, but my question isn't about... My question isn't about coverage. My question is about the actual studios who are using their material and they're not paying their creators. I do have a problem with that. Like...
If it's under a certain limit, that is fair game. They're not using it.
You'll be surprised, Stu, stuff I can tell you. Stuff I've heard this from guys like Chuck Dixon, okay?
I know what you're saying. The creators are underappreciated.
Yeah.
I agree with
no,
that.
No, but even
the argument
like,
you're making doesn't hold any water.
Well, I think it does.
They haven't used them.
No, listen to this. What about this? An entire scene, word for word, in Punisher Warzone, or The Punisher or Punisher Warzone, is used from
Is it less than 5 minutes long?
I have no idea. It's a fairly long... It's a scene, a full breakdown of
if
a scene.
It's less than 5 minutes, then yeah, it's fair game.
What, you don't think the creator should get anything at all from that? When they take it out word for word, an entire scene...
Dave, it's not about what I think. It's about the law. If it's less than 5 minutes, it is fair game.
I'm not sure if it is less than 5 minutes.
That's as black and white as it gets.
I actually think it's more complicated than that. I think they actually don't actually have a legal... I don't actually think Marvel do compensate for that at all.
It's less than 5 minutes. They don't have to. Legally, they don't have to.
Okay. So I have a big problem with that.
Look on any YouTube channel. When they're showing samples of TV shows, when they're looking at samples of music videos, they're all owned by the creators. They don't need to pay the creators unless they're showing more than a certain level of that.
But what about what about the show itself, though, is what I'm talking. The show itself is filming. Assume it does, for the sake of argument, because this scene may well go for more than 5 minutes. Assume that it does go. Assume it's like a 7 minute scene. Okay, it's the scene with it's one of the scenes with the cops and stuff, and word for word.
That doesn't matter whether it's word for word or whether it's an interpretation of it, whether it's even just incredibly vague. Doesn't matter.
I have a real problem. I have a fundamental problem with the creators not getting their fair share of payment.
The reason is it is impossible to kind of create something new without taking small portions of other things and putting them together.
Well, what about when you recreate an entire scene word for word? I have a problem with that because that is
a level of plagiarism within a book, within a script.
There
will be something like 10%.
Yeah.
That has been done before elsewhere.
It's an entire scene, dude.
That is within those limits. It doesn't matter what the scene is, how accurate it is, what characters are in it, who owns it.
Let me ask you this, though. Do you feel that that's in any way fair? I feel that's...
Yes, I feel that if you policed that to that level, you wouldn't be able to have any kind of creative freedom. You would put the chains on you writing your books if they found a sentence that someone else had written.
Not at all, because I'm not adapting.
You would have to
I'm not adapting.
It doesn't matter the circumstance.
No, but listen to what I'm saying, Stuart.
You're saying bullshit, though, Dave. It doesn't matter the circumstance.
No.
It doesn't matter who, where, when, why, or how.
Okay,
What matters is that they're doing it within a reasonable limit according to the law.
But we're talking about adaptation. When I'm writing a book, I'm not adapting anything. It's original material.
But if you happen to write a sentence that someone else had written before you.
Yeah.
Let's say you write a sentence talking about a character that...
Yeah, I get it. There's similar dialogue.
Tolkien had written.
Yeah.
Word for word, but it's only a five words. Technically, he wrote it before you. You would need to pay him if you're going to police it to that level.
No, that's not what I'm... But I'm not talking about policing at the level. I'm talking about adaptation of actual characters that have been created by people. And I do believe...
But where do you draw the line?
Well...
Is it the clothing they wear? Is that part of it?
Well, I can tell you where the...
Is it what they say? Is it
currently,
what they do?
Currently where they draw the line, from my understanding, Stuart, and this is in talking to some creators and in researching the topic, currently where they draw the line is... A lot of this is to keep it out of the Supreme Court because they're terrified of the Supreme Court. They're terrified of when Kirby took them all the way. Kirby's estate took them all the way before they got paid out, okay, because they weren't paying the family at all for any of his creations, at all. That's how they paid Stan Lee off. They just pay them to shut them up. But, okay, what I'm saying is, I believe what they do now is they pay on per character. So if you created Frank Castle, Jerry Conway created Frank Castle, okay, he would have an arrangement – with Marvel, okay, for the use of Punisher. Now, at DC, they're quite point blank. They have these cushy arrangements where, you created Green Arrow, you created Deathstroke, you created whoever. Basically, what they have is an arrangement that's almost not, it's almost like me giving you a paycheck. Stuart, you created Robin, Dick Grayson and Robin, who appeared in, let's say he appears in The Batman, just for sake of argument. I give you $2,500 or whatever. The payments are quite small. But that payment is recognition, and you will keep getting that payment for its use in various mediums.
Absolutely.
That's generally
if it's a major character.
Yeah, but that applies to minor characters, There's the whole system at DC, which a lot of creators have gone into quite a lot of detail.
If DC want to pay more than they are legally obligated to, good on them.
Yeah, but you,
that
you,
is a great system to
do,
have.
But do you understand a lot of the reason? Fantastic. Do you know a lot of the reason why they're doing that though? Is because they've been challenged so heavily in the courts regarding with the Siegel and Schuster estates and regarding the whole Bob Kane Bill Finger fiasco, and the Jack Kirby one at Marvel.
Those scenarios are very different to what you and I are talking about right now.
Well, Jack Kirby,
you're talking about creators of characters.
Yeah.
And you're talking about
Jack Kirby was
that are called after that character. You don't get any bigger than Batman. You don't get any bigger than these characters. We're talking about Easter eggs in other movies.
Yeah, no, I'm merely pointing out that that's how the system works. I don't know the amount of payment, but I believe it's not huge. It could well be higher, the higher you go up. But a lot of the time what they put in are quite minor characters that people are credited. And there's a system that DC have and Warner's have where you can write in and go, I created Connor Hawke in issue such and such, and it's verified and checked, et cetera, et cetera. But a lot of it's an unofficial, like I believe a lot of it's a fairly unofficial relationship that's when you take that payment, you are in a sense taking, like you won't take us to court on this topic because they are actually terrified of the Supreme Court and creator rights and stuff like that. They actually are quite terrified. That's why they pay them out at the door. They actually pay them out at the door because Marvel don't want to have to pay Jack Kirby's estate a huge portion, okay, of what he created because of the billions of dollars it stacks up to. So it's easier to throw $10 million at the family at the court steps. You know what I mean? Like, it's easy to tie them up in legal disputes with deep, deep pockets that Warner's and Disney have because the pockets don't come much deeper. These creators aren't made of, you know, endless money. That's just the point I'm making. I'm not this revolutionary against capitalism, but I do have a minor gripe with us begrudging payments of quite small amounts to creators. Like, I do believe Jim Starlin should have got paid a certain amount of money for Thanos turning up and for all the other characters he created in the Cosmic Universe turning up. His payments should have been more than he got for El Diablo, whatever the fuck the character's name is, in DC. Like, it's not an equitable relationship.
It is. El Diablo is a major, major character in that movie.
Well, you know, stupid. But I mean,
like, he defeats the villain at the end of the movie. That's about as big as you get.
Yeah. Look, I'm not even sure if that's the character, but it's... I'm literally quoting from the guy himself. We should research it. I can research it and bring it up next show. But
I mean, look, the amount of payment I'm sure is less than they want.
It's a lot less, Drew.
But it doesn't matter how much it's getting paid. Like,
well, back in the day,
have anything to do with it.
Back in the day,
whether or not they get paid doesn't depend on the amount. It depends on whether they are legally owed any money.
Well, I mean, yeah, they basically sign agreement. Like, a lot of it as well, what makes it even more difficult is it can be disputed. Like, the ownership of a character, as you can understand at a comic book company, between an artist and a writer and stuff.
If it really was this bad...
Oh, it's bad.
People would have said something. People would plenty be going into the courts.
Plenty of people have said something.
Well, then why don't these people stop taking this...
Well, plenty
meager amount of money that you're talking about.
Let me tell you why.
Go to court instead.
Let me tell you why. Okay, here's why a lot of it doesn't get taken any further because these creators are not wealthy. Okay, and they're up against major corporations. You've seen it with the Bullfinger Estate. Okay,
look, wealth doesn't have anything to do with it. When there's 100 creators that are all in the same boat.
Well, I agree. A class action suit, I agree with you, is probably a way to go. But I'm just saying
to
you, wealth against
case pro bono.
Well, the guy who did it with Siegel and Schuster, it cost millions, dude. It cost literally millions. He ran it for ages.
They stand to make millions.
Yeah, well,
they have a legitimate claim.
What happened? You know what? They didn't get to the Supreme Court. They almost got to the Supreme Court in the Kirby case, and they almost got to the Supreme Court in the Siegel Schuster case. In both cases, at the 11th hour, after multiple appeals, it got settled for major cash and major, you know, confidential arrangements, like non-disclosures, because eventually they ponied up. But that was after being buried in years, literally millions of dollars of legal fees. The creators don't, the normal creators don't have those kind of funds. That's the reality of the situation. I understand what you're saying, but don't feel like the need to stand up for these corporate giants too much, Stu, because they are ripping the soul out of a lot of these people who've built the comics and stuff that are in the movies.
Absolutely, but anyone that settles instead of taking them a step further and getting the right they deserve.
That's an easy thing to say, Stu, but like, you're up against Warner's and Disney, who can tie you up literally in Siegel and Schuster's, exactly what you're saying. A lawyer took them, who was heavily involved as well, took them for years.
The bad press alone would cost them more than it takes to settle a lawsuit.
Stu, they withstood a lot of bad press on the Siegel Schuster thing. If you look through the documentation, it went on for years. Okay. Warner's were aggressive. You know, they're eager to settle, but their settled dude is like take 2 million. They stand to lose so much more than that if they actually lost.
At the end of the day, neither of these big companies, Warner or Disney, would be doing anything that's not legally required.
Well, I mean,
they would not intentionally be breaking the law by underpaying creators.
I don't know if the word's intentionally, Stu, but they're terrified of actually...
You do not get that big without having to pay what you need to pay as a minimum.
Hmm.
Like, you cannot just get that big without paying bills.
But you do realise that the history of comics is littered with absolutely exhausted people who have been paid a pittance while corporations have gone on to profit from the creations. It's littered with them. The bodies of creators are many, dude, is what I'm saying. It is a low-paying industry, okay, that doesn't, in comparison to a lot of other industries, it's not particularly high-paying, okay? Like, I'd be earning more than a lot of writers.
Doesn't matter whether it's high-paying or not.
No, well, it does. It does, though, because they accept what they're given, and then those very things...
If you were worried about it, you have a choice what industry you're in.
Yeah, well...
None of these comic book creators have a gun to their head saying, create something brilliant that we're going to make millions off of.
Yeah, okay. Well, I guess we have a different stance.
Freely going, I want to be a comic book creator.
A lot of these people love creating comics. I'm
part of the job.
Nothing I'm saying, Stu, hasn't been said before. Like, I'm telling you that, like, if you look through, you will cry if you look through the history of how some of these people have died. Like, Bill Finger, dude, is famous for it. He died penniless. Dude, he created
the
Batman.
Of people that have died penniless that shouldn't have throughout history.
Oh, it's long.
This industry.
Yeah, it's long.
It's long and tragic, but it doesn't mean that what we're doing isn't right.
But I'm not really. It's not a sob story for those who've gone before. I'm still saying an equitable deal moving forward is the better solution. That's the end part of my claim. My thing isn't like corporations are evil; they're corporations. But an equitable deal and maybe some sort of class action suit or a better representation is needed. Like, because otherwise, you'll see what's happening in the comics now is a lot of big-time creators have left the big two for this very reason. They go to Image because they own their property, and they actually earn more off those comics that might sell like 25,000 as opposed to being on a comic that might sell 60,000 at one of the big two. They're earning more, they own the IP, etc. So it does hurt the industry in its own way too, because the big creators like the Fractions, the Hickmans,
but see,
the Brubakers.
That's brilliant for the
industry.
Well,
it hurts the big two. It hurts
that's
the big
fine.
Two. Yeah.
That's okay. Absolutely fine.
Yeah.
If a creator's making what they want to do,
yeah,
and they get what they consider a fair pay,
true,
there's no complaints by anyone. Like, that's the day.
No, I hear what you're saying. You're saying, like, they make the break, and, I mean, you would have to... I hear you. The Fractions, the Ruckers...
Obviously, no one knows their character's going to be as big as it is.
Mm.
But these people all sign contracts willingly. Like...
Yeah, but, Stu, that's a slippery slope. Because a lot of contracts...
No, it's so black and white. This isn't open to interpretation. There's nothing here to...
It gets argued in the courts, man, heavily. And these lawsuits can be long... And, like, you are fighting against corporations with deep, deep, deep pockets, Stu. And if you're relying on them for work, look, that's how they get you, Stu. It's the classic case. I don't mean to sound like a raving communist here. I'm far from it. But I believe a measure of sympathy is needed here. And we should not be saying, oh, we should not be giving equitable payments are needed. If you created a character, you should be getting paid if he turns up for 5 seconds.
You shouldn't.
The pittance, well, that's what happens, Stu.
It's not.
Like, dude, the character of...
Getting paid for a 5-second appearance doesn't happen.
Oh, well, I'm exaggerating, but a minor appearance, okay, of a character, you do get paid for, is my understanding. The inner workings of it, Stu, they don't actually. It's all behind closed doors. Like, they sign NDAs for taking the money. So these binding settlements for taking the money, we don't hear. We don't get the inner workings of how it works out. Marvel are very secretive about the whole topic. You know, they're extremely secretive. Yeah, DC have a slightly more open policy, and creative have spoken about it, like, openly, like,
sure,
more about it, which is why we know more about them.
I mean, look,
the DC
is willing to pay more. That's good for them. Like,
yeah. Well, I believe that honestly, I really firmly believe that is what should be happening. I mean, it would.
The idea that creators should get paid more is not a new concept. Everyone's been saying that for...
Yeah, but there's only
hundreds
one way
of years. Like, that's nothing new. It's nothing to do with this industry alone.
No, but comics is a particularly egregious example of it. Because comics are so big in terms of the media presence.
It's only been big in the last 20 years, though.
But Superman, Batman, Spider-Man, these IPs have made plenty of money over the decades. But before the movies, they made plenty of money in merchandising.
Sure, you know? Absolutely. But these creators knew what they were getting into. No one has ever been forced to create something.
Sure, but let me ask you this question. Yes or no, do you believe Jack Kirby was ripped off?
Yeah.
Yeah, see, I do, and that's what I boil it down to. I think you look at one of the godfathers of the industry, he was even exiled, dude. Stan Lee was the one who became the face, okay?
Yeah, absolutely.
Jack Kirby was as instrumental in building the No, it's nothing about Stan Lee. He was a salesman. But Jack Kirby, because he wasn't the salesman, didn't get the same deal. He didn't get the same ride that Stan Lee's had. I have a big problem with that because he did just as much. You know what I mean? He carried that on his shoulders, dude. It's why he left.
True, but name an industry where equal work gets equal pay.
Yeah, I hear. Corporate life is corporate life. I take a paycheck. You think
there is no industry on the planet where equal work gets equal pay?
We're not living in communist Russia. I understand
that. Doesn't happen.
Yeah, no, I understand that. I'm
like
someone
it up. That's out there laboring all day works a lot harder than you or I do during a day.
Sure, I hear.
Yet I imagine we're getting paid more than most of those people, or some of them.
Yeah, definitely some of them. As if you're not owning the business, you know.
Exactly. It's not about how much work you do and how much pay you get.
It's entirely to do with the
quality of the work, the industry you're in.
I hear you. I work for a corporation. I go for a wage that I've agreed to. I have a commission that I agree to. Like, I have no problems with them. By no means do I have any problems with how I'm paid. But if I did, there's the door. Like, I've got not much empathy for...
Exactly. You willingly signed that contract. You agreed to what's happening.
It's not slavery, etc.
If you don't want to be there anymore, you can leave.
Yeah,
you have completely free choices.
Yeah, okay.
And if what you've set up while you've been there continues to make money, you can't go back to them and say, well, I did that. I put that system in place. I deserve...
Oh, sure. Yeah. Yeah, true. But this is—it's a bit different with creatively, though. Like legally, it is even different creatively. Like just the sheer fact that most of these creators have moved away from the publishers.
Yeah, but you can't look at comic book industry as separate from the movies, from TVs, from novels.
Mm.
Anything creatively has to all fall under the same umbrella.
Well, I heard an interesting thing once.
Because otherwise, what's the difference between writing a comic book and having that comic book adapted as a movie?
Well,
or writing a screenplay or a novel and having that as adapted as a movie. They should be seen as the same thing. If you're creating anything...
Well, for example, if I took DeMorn, if DeMorn, who's my character in the DeMorn books, this Sunday series, became a character, I would earn a lot more off that, okay, than someone who created Connor Hawke, if it went all the way.
Sure.
Because I own the character
if
completely.
If someone else wanted to make a movie and have a character called DeMorn that shows up for 2 minutes...
Well, if it's not the same character...
Even if it is the same character, they're legally allowed to do that.
Maybe, Stu, I could easily sue them if it's my character.
No, you can't.
I don't know, Stu, really?
That's free use. People can use a YouTube channel and sample what we do on this show. We can't sue them.
What are you talking about? If someone did a
saying this whole time, you're allowed to use a
fair use. But if someone did a full movie starring DeMorn with DeMorn as the main character,
if it was less than 2 minutes,
completely
long,
separate, yeah,
fine.
Yeah, but I'm talking if someone took a full movie, that would be a lawsuit. Obviously.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Like, I hear
what you're saying, Stu, but I guess I'm not talking about 2 minute appearances. I'm talking about much longer appearances than that and multiple appearances.
You were talking about Jim Starlin should get paid for the 2 minutes Thanos has been on screen.
He got paid, Stu, but the pittance that he got paid was overwhelmed by the appearance of a very minor character in one appearance in one movie.
Look, Dave, if everyone got paid these giant amounts.
Mm.
There wouldn't be any of these movies because they wouldn't make that much money.
Yeah, I hear. It'd be interesting to see...
It'd be impossible to have an anthology movie. You couldn't have more than two characters.
Yeah, I hear. It'd be interesting to see...
Shoot yourself in the foot.
It'd be interesting to see the receipts of what creators get paid in, like, Infinity War with so many characters on the table. Like, it'd be interesting to see the breakup of that money.
Of them $10 million for their character's appearance?
Oh, I'm not talking about that much money,
like,
Stu.
Like, you just...
Yeah.
There goes any profit that movie was ever going to make.
Well, it depends, doesn't it? I mean, the movie's going to make billions, but it cost $1 billion, you know, or it costs like
exactly.
800 million. So the stakes that I get it that the stakes of the studios take are high, that you know, at a certain point, nearly every franchise has this, where they make a movie for like 300 million and suddenly it takes 100 million and they've hit a $200 million loss.
Yeah.
Like they're the ones underwriting the risk. I get that. I get that that's how the whole industry works. I don't have a problem with that. I just would hope and press that the... insignificant, like the very small portion they get paid would be increased. I heard an interesting thing once with Brubaker. He was talking on John Suntress, and he was saying it was interesting to him that comics were one of the mediums that was so screwed. Whereas if he'd written books, okay, starring characters, he would be getting like a lot more money than he was getting from the appearance of like a Winter Soldier or stuff. And he wasn't making a point like poor me. He was merely showing that since the beginning of like modern comics in the 40s, it was interesting that that was kind of one of the things where creators' rights were so small. Okay, and they were talking about how, because they came out of magazines and periodicals and stuff, like, you know, how like Timely Comics, wasn't it? Which one was Timely Comics? Was that DC or Marvel?
Timely was Marvel.
Yeah, they did a lot of magazines, etc. They did almost like, yeah, not porn, but
that's
sort of
much everyone started.
Yeah, yeah, and because
romance novellas,
and exactly, and because it came out of that mechanism, out of that publishing industry, the creative rights were so small. Like, he was basically making the point of why was it comics that where the creators' rights were so trampled on from the very beginning of the whole modern comic book industry.
But look at modern media. Look at like something like Twitter. People can tweet something that's brilliant genius in 140 characters.
Sure,
and it gets put on news shows. It gets put all over the place. They're never going to see a cent from any of that.
Not true. True. Well, yeah. Interesting. Like, anyway.
You don't just own everything you produce.
Yeah.
It's, you've got to have some limit of fair use.
No, I agree with that.
Plagiarism is going to exist in some extent.
I don't disagree with you about fair use. There is a certain amount of fair use that's interesting discussion.
It's just set by law.
I'd like to, when we have, we've got a couple of creators who are going to come on again. Chuck wants to come on again soon. Maybe we'll put a question to him about it. Like just some.
I'd love to ask him.
Just to get his views, really. I've got, just to get his views and stuff. Because I know he's had a lot of experience with owning characters like Bane, for example. Like, he has a stake in that character.
Plus he's worked for both sides of the fence.
Worked for both sides of the fence, yeah. And he could tell us some interesting stories. Yeah. Note that down, Stu. When we have Jack Dixon, we can ask him that one. Jesus. All right. Anyway, turning on from this one where Dave was in, like, Lois Lane was in a little bit of a, rant there. Frank Darabont. Now, I love Frank Darabont. He appeared on Entourage. He's a famous showrunner. I believe he was a director or producer, perhaps, on like things like The Green Mile. He was involved with Shawshank Redemption. He's a fantastic writer and creator. He was involved for the first two seasons of Walking Dead before getting dumped off the show and having a long-standing litigation between Walking Dead creators and himself as showrunner, saying he's entitled a portion of profits, blah, blah, blah. He's rage balled over Stu in some emails that were shown in court where he was showing his level of frustration with Walking Dead Season 2, I believe. And it was an interesting topic because it very much is what we were just talking about here, litigation. This was litigation. Frank Darabont didn't create The Walking Dead. That was owned by Robert Kirkman and, like, the artist who created it with him. But he did develop the show heavily. And the show went on to make a ton of money. And then they fired him. And it's been going through the courts now for a couple of years. Just an interesting one, Stu, to see how this one boils down to. Because Frank Darabont is a very respected creator.
Absolutely.
And showrunner. And if you remember, in Walking Dead Season 2, they had no money. Their budget was tiny. And I've watched all the Walking Dead seasons. Season 2 is terrible until the ending because they were trapped on the farm because they actually had no money to make the show. They'd made a ton of money off it in the first season, but they'd given a much lower budget for the second season.
Yeah,
and the show really suffered.
What Frank's talking about in these emails that he's written, it's basically that the script that he's been writing is not being directed well.
Yeah.
So the inflections on the words are all wrong.
Yeah.
Occasionally the characters are ad-libbing. They're putting their own slant on it, and he thinks it's taking away from the
story. And he absolutely... he doesn't hold back on his emails, does he, Stu?
No, he's furious.
I have no problems with it. Hilariously, Frank Darabont, when they I think they brought it up in court to sort of, like, shame him, you know? And he said, I stand by everything I said. He was like, yeah, I'm hyperbolic because I'm showrunning and it felt like it was going nowhere. It is the weakest season of Walking Dead by a long way. And I've watched all of Walking Dead and had some other weak seasons here and there. But
the latest season I gave up on.
Did you? Which, yeah. I don't even remember what happened. I mean, I've watched it with Michelle.
See, I watched the first, like, two or three episodes and gave up. Like, it's just not holding anything for me anymore.
It's certainly, one thing about Walking Dead, I believe, in the comic and show is it's not afraid to tread water like you wouldn't believe. I mean, season two.
Of 13 episodes, maybe four of them are really worth watching.
It's gotten some really good, I like Walking Dead as a show, but it really has some episodes where you're like, wow, I could have not watched that.
Yeah, you can sleep through it.
You know, like, I didn't need that character's backstory.
I mean, it's interesting what Frank's talking about in these emails, isn't it?
Yeah.
How much do you rely on this script and how much do you rely on the actors? In this case, they've been playing these characters for, some of them, five...
Yeah, but his emails only refer to season two. He was fired off the show after season two, so it's early on in the show, which he was involved in. He was involved in seasons one and two.
Do you, as a director... rely 100% on the script, or do you maybe want to put your own flavor?
Yeah, well,
if you see something that maybe doesn't feel right to you,
yeah,
Like, I'm not sure this...
No, it's just interesting, Stu. It's not really... It's just more of a... This is a very bitter...
It's odd for me to see that he's this angry. That's
this is a very bitter dispute. He was fired off the show once when he'd made it a hit, and he was. And it's all about his profit participation rights in the seasons. And also, if you notice... In Walking Dead as it went off, at one point they dropped him, I believe, as created by, and he's now back on it. Like it's like Robert Kirkman, someone else with Frank Darabont, and then they slash through the name. So this has been an ongoing litigation for years. So yeah,
I'm sure there's bad blood in this.
Yeah, there's plenty of bad blood. So there's not really. Yeah, it's more interesting. I'll be interested to see how it shakes out. I have a bit of an interest in these kind of things, Stu, because sometimes I like it. Sometimes, honestly, it is eat your popcorn and watch what happens, because you're talking about, like, you know, people. Everyone is hungry for money, dude, and these shows generate money, and it's all about who can get their hands in. You know.
Yeah, exactly. It feels more like greed than anything else, yeah. Like creative rights or...
Kirkman is... we're not saying anything here that hasn't been... Kirkman is famous for having litigation. Like, the co-artist, who was the co-creator of Walking Dead, sued and had to settle with Kirkman. Like, Kirkman dropped him. The guy who created Walking Dead with him, the artist...
Yeah.
He's
credited on all the comics.
Yeah, but only after he got... He at one point, Kirkman said, well, we paid him a certain amount of money as a payoff.
Yeah.
And that was disputed. And again, it was settled out of court. A lot of this is settled out of court because can you imagine how much money Walking Dead's making? Plenty.
Oh, yeah.
So, I mean, you know, like, it's interesting. Stu, now I'm turning to something. This is a contentious episode of Signal of Doom. We've seen the world's a dark place and Lois Lane's, like, light is everywhere. Now, Stu, Matt Reeves gave an extended interview where he confirmed that he's abandoned Affleck's script. Now, what does this mean for Batfleck, Stu? Is he now just a hired gun content to read off the page? What is going on?
Look, I don't know. I mean... They had this script fully fleshed out.
Frank Terrio, Jeff Johns, and Affleck had done at least two runs on the script.
Yeah. Mm. So why Matt Reeves decided to scrap it, I don't know. Maybe he's doing it.
Well, he's got his own vision. He's got his own vision. I believe that was a big part of why he walked away from the negotiating table. He's like, I've got a vision. I need to have...
If he's that passionate that he's willing to get rid of an entire script that's written by some pretty big names.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
Then I love that idea.
Yeah, I'm not against it.
The more passionate someone is about a movie, generally the better it is.
You're either coming in as... You're being chopped in as like a Ron Howard situation where there's very much a script in place, they're shooting, you're there to sort of massage it and get it all working again, or you're coming in from a ground-up reconstruction. Two completely different scenarios.
Yeah, I mean, look at someone like James Gunn with Guardians.
Yes.
Like, he was so passionate about what he wanted to do, and he had this total vision for how he wanted it to run.
Mm-hmm.
And they just let him go with it, and it worked
phenomenally
well.
Live or die by the sword sort of thing. Exactly. Like, it's his vision, let him go. I've got no problems with Matt Reeves, who's coming off War of the Planet of the Apes, which apparently is awesome.
Yeah.
Every report I'm hearing is that this is a guy with serious vision. And my question is more about Affleck. What does this do for Affleck? A respected filmmaker who's in a slump, who Live by Night flopped... That's true. Alcohol issues, he's had marriage breakdowns, he had all sorts of personal crises beset him, and his script, that I imagine this guy's fairly passionate about Batman. I imagine Affleck playing Batman may have been a bit of a dream role. He was going to write and direct it, now he's an actor, dude. That's got to do something to your ego as a Hollywood guy. That's got to do something.
Yeah, but I mean, who knows how personally, I doubt he's taking this personally, I don't think it's a personal decision.
No.
I think he's got... Look, every time... If you're an actor on this set, the director is basically your boss.
Sure, but...
The boss is coming with...
But he was the boss only 6 months ago. He was the guy who was going to direct it.
Well, yeah, exactly. Mm. But he stepped down. Yeah. They kind of fired him. He kind of walked away.
Yeah, yeah.
I imagine it was mostly mutual.
You're saying he's been directed before many times. Like, it's not the first...
Exactly. This isn't the first time he's had a director. It's not the first time that he showed up to do a job.
I hope Affleck doesn't sort of, like, half-ass this. Like, I hope that he sticks around for three movies.
I'm hoping that he looks at someone like Robert Downey and sees exactly what being the linchpin of a...
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
...a franchise like this can
Batman's got to work, dude. Batman's got to work in a DC universe. You can't have a half-hearted Batman.
And the other thing is, we've had so many iterations of Batman that doing your own thing is probably going to help more than hinder.
Because
I don't want to see a Batman that I've already seen before.
No.
We've seen the Nolan trilogy, which is some of the best Batman we've ever seen.
Definitely, definitely.
I think you've got to do something drastically different to stand away from that.
Hmm. And we heard that he's going for a mood piece, a bit of detective work. I like
all
this.
Which is great. We haven't seen
all the sounds of that. I like, you know?
Like, everything's coming out good news, except if you're Affleck.
Yeah, Affleck's the one who's got to, I think,
and I'm just hoping that he's not reading this as a personal attack on him, and that he's kind of, it's a job. He's got other things that he can maybe focus on or worry about.
Yeah.
Do that. Don't dwell on this.
Don't get too dark, Batfleck. We've been there before with you, and this is where all the problems started.
A dark Batman, but not a dark Batfleck.
Yeah. Batfleck, you need to remember the joy in your life. Maybe, I don't know, go with a younger lady or something. Like, get a woman in your life, you know. You know what I'm saying, Stu? He needs
Dave's always saying this
stuff. Like, he needs to remember that there is joy. And, hey, guess what? Look at the numbers in the bank account, because I bet you they're extensive. You know, don't be afraid.
He's getting paid. He's making money.
He's making plenty of money. Don't be afraid to maybe lie on a bit of money at a certain point. And I mean, imagine
if I was him, I would have done.
Imagine this stunt casting, Stu.
As soon as you win an Oscar, you're lying a bit of money. Imagine that's this. What you do.
Batfleck drops out, replacing him. Michael Keaton comes back to the role.
Do you know what I'd like to see? Michael Keaton playing someone like an Alfred or something.
Yeah, I'd love to see Michael Keaton involved in...
like
in
a bat-centric kind of role.
Not even Alfred. I think he could do a really good villain or something. I think Michael Keaton's such a good actor.
He was great as the Vulture.
It wouldn't stun me if Warner's reached out to Keaton, because Keaton loves Batman. Yeah. And he is such a dynamic actor.
But I think he'd detract a little bit from the role because he is so known as Batman.
What about Riddler? That's something I think Keaton could do. Riddler, kind of a bit off the wall, but not all the way off the wall. You know, he's not Joker.
Somewhat off the wall.
Well, he's somewhat off the wall. Whatever way you go with Riddler, he is a bit crazy, but he's nowhere near Joker-level crazy.
No, and I mean, do you think they try to recast the Joker after what happened in Suicide Squad?
Oh, I wouldn't mind. Or wouldn't
they
mind.
Run with Leto from now?
I hope they... I couldn't, like... That performance left a bad taste in my mouth. I know Jared Leto's a good actor, but it wouldn't worry me if they recast Joker.
I didn't hate the performance. I think when I saw the extended movie, it made a lot more sense, but it still wasn't my favourite.
Yeah, he was so...
possibly my least favourite Joker, but...
definitely my least favourite. I mean,
didn't hate it.
Dude, you're going against Shat Nicholson and Heath Ledger, so... great performances.
Following Heath Ledger,
two great performances.
You're never going to do a good Joker following Heath Ledger.
No, but go to Jack. Jack was fantastic.
Jack was great, but completely different.
Completely different. That's what I love about it. It's two completely different ways of doing it. I thought Leto was... he wasn't as horrible as people say. I thought far worse was Jesse Eisenberg as Luther. That was terrible.
Oh, that was bad.
That was really bad.
What I would like to see is them do some reveal that he wasn't Luther and that's the Riddler.
Yeah,
because that performance works for the Riddler.
Yeah, something. Anybody
that
but
crazy,
Luther.
Unhinged, nerdy guy?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Could you imagine him saying, oh, I've been impersonating Lex this whole time, I'm the Riddler?
I like it.
Like, that just works.
Even he's a clone or something, you know, some sort of sci-fi explanation, anything other than
something
just...
something that gets him away from Luther.
From being fucking Luther, because he was terrible as Luther. That was a shocking performance.
Oh, yeah.
And he's still around. If they go, but we haven't heard anything. But I imagine Eisenberg may play a role in, or at least Luther may play a role in Justice League if Steppenwolf's there.
I don't know. I mean, I feel like they're going to be focusing on Steppenwolf and introducing the new characters more than...
But remember that Luther did have some connection to Steppenwolf at the end of... remember the deleted scenes and all that?
They're probably
going to
use the name.
Yeah.
As opposed... like, kind of like how they use Stark Industries in Marvel.
Yeah.
They'll use Luther... Lex, you know...
Lex Corp.
Lex's name and Luther Corp and...
Yeah, no, look, isn't it good to be talking about Justice League and even the DC Universe? I do feel Matt Reeves is adding this project some class, and hopefully Affleck is... he needs to get with the program in a big fucking way. Because I want to get Affleck back out on the campaign trail again, because he's going to be at San Diego Comic-Con this week promoting Justice League. So hopefully Batfleck comes out all the fucking way into this, you know?
Yeah, the other thing is with the Comic-Con, we're about 99% sure we're going to get another trailer for Justice League.
Good.
They've got all the panel there.
If you had a time machine, would you transport with me right now to opening night? I would.
If I could go to Comic-Con?
Yeah, just forward in time? Yeah, I would.
I'd love to do that.
I'd grab the lottery numbers while we're there too.
Oh,
of course.
If you wouldn't.
Of course I would.
There's a 50 million one in Australia this week.
It'd just be nice.
I wouldn't just jump forward a week.
I'd split it with you, Stu.
That's generous of you.
25 each.
I'd take that.
Yeah, we'd take it. See, we work well together. This is why the signal works, guys.
Yeah,
you know,
if I had to pick up $50 million,
well, we're not arguing about freedom of speech and creative rights. We're actually thinking about the actual numbers.
Yeah.
No, I tell you what, I want to see Affleck out there, put on his fucking game face and get back out there and start talking about Batman. I want you to start talking about Batman again, Affleck, about how pumped you are for this fucking role.
I'd like him to show a bit more passion than what he's been doing.
Don't give us this bullshit. We don't want to hear
sad fleck that sad fleck around when he was moping next to Superman.
Yeah,
Henry Cavill.
I've never had a better view before. It's so sad.
Looking off. I'm worth
$200 million. No one loves me. No one understands me. Get over it, Affleck. Get back into it. I like you as an actor. Get into it. I want to see you do it. I thought you did very well in Batman Superman. Come on, get on the horse.
Yeah.
Now, Stu, turning to our next news item. This is a rumor that came off Batman News. Wonder Woman possibly set in the 1980s and Steve Trevor back. I don't know how he's back.
Yeah, I don't.
Or even alive. Like,
I mean, the first one was set during World War One.
It's set during the 80s. I've got not any issues. I love 80s stuff. Wonder Woman in the 80s, no problems. She's immortal. Like,
oh, you know? Yeah.
Like, so that's fine. I've got no problems with that.
No, you could put her in literally any time frame.
It still is interesting.
Fine, but you can't, unless they somehow de-age Steve Trevor.
Yeah. Because I don't even want him back.
In his prime.
Do you really want him back?
I enjoyed that performance.
I like Chris Pine. But unless you're going to come up with some bullshit sci-fi explanation, which is the only way I can...
But I feel like either you go the Star Trek route, which he's in... And he somehow drops through a wormhole and comes into the 1980s.
Or you play the Descendant.
Captain America, he gets frozen,
yeah.
Gets thawed out in the 80s. You don't want to go either of those roads.
What about, the rumor I heard was he's the Descendant and just looks exactly like him.
Oh, I like that even less than my crazy.
I think that's horrible.
Balls to the wall idea. Like, that's just awful.
If I'm right, am I right or wrong? Have you ever seen the Linda Carter 70s? You said wrong, Stuart. Come on, Stuart. In the 70s Linda Carter show, the first few episodes are set in World War II.
Yeah.
But then from the second season, they went to the 70s. I believe Steve Trevor was just playing a slightly aged version of himself, or maybe he was playing a descendant. I'm not sure.
I don't think they ever cleared that up. I think he just played a slightly aged version.
Slightly aged, with a little bit of grey in the hair.
Yeah.
And I sort of played.
He was like 18 in the first movie.
Yeah. I know it looked like I was 40, but I was really like 20, and now I'm 50. Yeah, it was, I don't know. I think anything's better than it's Steve Trevor's like fucking grandson and he looks exactly the same.
Well, otherwise, he's going to have to be 80. Like, that doesn't work.
And then she's going to like be attracted to him as well. It's like, okay, I guess.
Like, weird. No, I don't know.
It's just odd. Nothing is. Look, it being the 90s.
I would much rather, if Wonder was going to have a solo movie, I would much rather see her deal with Themyscira and the gods and go mythical.
You were saying that, yeah.
That would be such a good movie. Her dealing with like the ramifications of killing Ares.
Because the problem, when I see 80s, I love the 80s, you know that. But I feel that, like, Wonder Woman fish out of the water in the 80s is going to kind of be a bit comedic, and I'm not sure if I really want that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I don't want Wonder Woman in the shopping mall putting on leg warmers.
Oh, no.
I sort of do because she's so hot. But, like, but I don't really, though. I don't want her doing breakdance or whatever. Like, I just feel that, like, it's going to do a disservice to the character. Maybe I'm wrong. I mean, Patty, look, it's a rumor, Stu. I mean, who knows?
Yeah, I mean, at this point, we don't have a script, we don't have a director, we don't have anything. So.
And I assume all the...
This is complete
conjecture. This could be just you or me just typing, oh, she's set in the 1990s, she's going to be in fucking Seattle partying with Kurt Cobain. Yeah, sure, that's what it's going to be.
It's not going to end well.
No, it's not going to end well. She told him not to do it.
Shit.
Turning to a very... I guess the bracelet didn't deflect the bullets, Stu. A little bit dark, but you know.
That's very dark.
I was going to say something worse, but I'm not going to. I've actually pulled myself back from the ledge. I was over the abyss, man. I was literally over the abyss, and I was like, I'm going to pull myself back. Stu, turning back, guys, on the abyss. Daniel Craig, set to return as James Bond, apparently.
Yeah, now, for his fifth run.
Yeah, it would be his fifth Bond movie, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And this will determine whether he's good or bad, because so far
he's 2-2. He's 2-2, yeah. Did you dislike Spectre as much as me? I thought it was incredibly boring.
I didn't hate it. It was better than Quantum of Solace.
Quantum of Solace was, I thought,
Quantum
terrible.
Of Solace is his worst.
Yeah. I love Skyfall.
Spectre is easily third.
Yeah, it's interesting. Did you find it boring? I just found it actually boring. I feel like I have to watch it again to give it a fairer... I've tried to watch it several times, and I constantly find myself very bored, like, in the first third.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't... Like I said, I didn't hate it, but it's certainly not one of my favourites.
I really like Skyfall.
Skyfall was brilliant.
And I love Casino Royale. It was excellent, yeah.
It was really good.
Now, Stu, interestingly, though, about Daniel Craig, on the promotional circuit, in the opening week, of...
He's been very open with this.
Yeah. On the opening week of, what was it called? The last one, Spectre. He said he would rather slit his wrists than play Bond again. I couldn't believe he said that during the opening week of his own movie.
Yeah.
That was a weird comment. He then followed that up
by saying that it's more about the physicality. Kind of the same, like as Hugh Jackman said he'd never do Wolverine again.
But Hugh Jackman didn't say he'd slit his wrist.
No, he was overly dramatic, but this is taken out of context.
I suppose, true.
This is not the whole...
Because it made news, though.
Oh, it did.
And if I was a producer...
I'm never going to play Bond again.
Yeah.
I'm done with it.
And let's face it, he was jockeying for one thing, and that's paper. You know? And
that's exactly what he's got.
I tell you what, though. In fairness to Daniel Craig, he does strike me as a guy who's not... He's not afraid to sort of... like push it, because he got paid plenty for Skyfall and plenty for Spectre. Plenty.
Oh, he got paid plenty for all of these.
Heavy money. And he is a good Bond. So, I mean, this is all about money. This is what this boils down to.
Absolutely. And they came to a number that he agreed with, so we're going to see.
Has he officially signed? I thought this was like on the verge of. I don't think they've officially announced it yet.
No, I heard that he was officially...
Oh, it's official, is it?
He was officially going to be Bond.
I mean, I'm happy for it. I think he's a great Bond. Like, I think he's a really, really good Bond. I think some of the movies aren't great, but he is a very, very good Bond himself.
Like, yeah, I quite like him. So, yeah. So far he's batting 50-50. He's...
Where would you put him in? Like, I'll give you my listing. I'll go one, Connery.
One is Connery.
Two is probably Craig, but...
Oh, two is Roger Moore.
Roger Moore is very close. It's probably, for me personally...
Okay.
Personal taste, probably Craig, but Roger Moore is a very close three.
Sure.
And Pierce Brosnan is after that. I didn't mind Pierce Brosnan either, actually.
See, I've got a soft spot for Timothy Dalton. I think he did a fantastic job.
Brief as
it was, I liked him.
He was unpopular, but he was good.
Pierce Brosnan was probably second to last above George Lazenby.
The first couple of Pierce Brosnan movies are pretty good, though. Like GoldenEye, it's not bad.
It was too camp, too cheesy, too over the top.
Yeah, okay.
It lost the heart of what Bond was, and I think Daniel Craig
went
back to the heart of that.
Yeah.
Which I really enjoyed.
He brought back the cruelty of Bond. Like, there's a flipping cruelty to Daniel Craig's Bond. There's a machoness as well.
I think he also brought back the whole idea of consequences.
Yeah.
Like, when you were watching Pierce Brosnan's run...
Yeah, yeah.
There was always this deus ex machina, there's a button that'll fix everything.
True.
He could end up in the worst possible scenario and he'll have a gadget.
His movies got cheesier and cheesier.
There was no stakes, there was no
consequence. I kind of liked his performance. Did you like his performance, though? I liked his performance. I thought he was a pretty good Bond.
No, I felt him too sleazy. Didn't like
him? Okay, fair enough.
Look, there's always been a certain level of sleaze to James Bond.
Yeah.
It's part of the character.
Yeah.
He was... all sleaze.
He was shooting, in my mind, for a bit of a Roger Moore. Kind of like, he echoed him a little
bit.
Yeah,
he just didn't get that class.
Yeah. Roger Moore was classy. I mean, I loved, as a kid, I saw more Roger Moore Bonds than anyone else because they were always on TV on Saturday nights. Yeah. I remember them more than I remember Connery. And I mean, I love Sean Connery just in general.
Sean Connery is easily the best Bond.
Yeah, I mean, there's
very few people that would disagree with that.
Yeah, I mean, if you think Sean Connery's not the best Bond, get a life. You know, turn off the podcast, get a life, come back.
Also, going back and watching those movies, because a lot of people now, they know the names, they could name all the Bonds, but they haven't seen those...
No, the originals.
Classic movies.
You should go watch them. Yeah, they're good. They're
brilliant films.
Throw them on, have a bit of popcorn, enjoy yourself. Like, they're good. You know? Yeah. Are they dated? Hell yeah, but they're funny as well. Are they slightly racist? Yes.
Well, everything from that time has a little bit of, racist, sexist, the lot.
Everything about it. Even Sean Connery himself, I believe.
Very politically correct.
Yeah. They're not striving for political correctness, those
movies. But you don't watch it critiquing them.
No. You've got to get in the spirit a bit. Come on.
You know there have been some bad Bond movies.
Oh, definitely. Some of Roger Moore's are not great. And, I mean...
But generally speaking, you're pretty safe with a Bond movie.
Yeah. Often I always found with a Bond movie, a bit of a trademark was a great start and really, especially Roger Moore, getting bogged down in the middle badly. And but a lot of Roger Moore's start really well. He's got some incredible openings. One of the best Roger Moore openings is the one where he flies off the cliff with the Union Jack parachute.
Parachute.
I fucking love that. I remember being a kid and being pumped to watch, like, oh, they've got on whatever it was, the Moonraker, whatever. Watching it, loving that first 25 minutes. Come back to me an hour and 30 minutes later, like, I'm really struggling because, like, those movies were long and felt long.
Yeah.
They're very 70s, you know?
Very
70s. They're very 70s adventure. But, hey, look, that's not to say they're wrong or bad or anything. I mean, these are the movies that built the franchise they have today, you know?
I mean, these things evolve over time. I've got a hypothetical for you.
I I love it, Sue, already.
So
good to see you getting into the habit over there.
Daniel Craig, this is going to be his last Bond. They're not going to pony up more money for a sixth movie.
Unless they sign him for two.
I doubt he'd want to sign for two.
I think maybe, like a 60 million.
He was so set on
payday.
Not doing another Bond.
Yeah.
I doubt they could afford his price for two Bond movies.
And it's also time, because I think with him, I think it's the time of it all.
He's got to get into that.
It's the Hugh Jackman thing, like, yeah, staying in shape.
So let's say this is his last Bond.
Sure.
For sure.
Yep.
Would you be open to a new Bond being of colour, female?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I've been.
Any limits? Would you want a Bond to be...
I was always behind Idris Elba. He's my favourite actor. So I was one of the people who really would have loved to have seen him be Bond. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Hell yeah.
But would you want to see a female Bond?
I'd be open to it. Yeah, why not?
Nice.
I mean, I'm of the, like, probably, I think it's unlikely they'd go female, but if they did, I wouldn't. I think inevitably, with the world being what it is, there would be a segment that would just kick up. But me personally, no,
I mean,
not a problem at all.
There was controversy when Daniel Craig was cast because he was blonde.
Yeah. I never thought you can't have a blonde Bond. I thought that was stupid. I remember like that.
They'd always been tall, dark.
But people are fucking idiots. Like, there was controversy when Heath Ledger was Joker. There was controversy when Michael Keaton was Batman. I remember it. And you know what, kids? Like, judge the product when it comes out. If it's terrible and they're terrible, fine. But, like...
I mean, I think after...
Idris Elba, I would fucking love to be Bond. I think he would make a fantastic Bond.
At this point, I can't see him doing it.
I think he's even said.
Just because he's past that age.
I think he even got sick of being asked. And he's doing a movie. Have we talked about it in the show yet? Should the Dark Tower trailer come out?
Yeah,
cool. Because I'm very keen for Idris Elba. No, it's very similar to the whole Doctor Who thing. I'm actually very much would love to see a female Doctor Who. I think that's far more likely than a female Bond.
Like with Bond... I think you've got to look at it now as Bond is a code name.
Yeah.
Like, you've got to be the worst secret agent in the world to introduce yourself by your actual name
Bond,
every time
Bond.
You're at a bar.
Yeah, I mean, look, I don't even get into it too much, dude, or think about it too
much.
So
think of it as a code name that they just give Agent 007 the name James Bond.
Yeah, and you've got to kind
and
of get
that
the
way,
spirit.
If Daniel Craig dies or retires or whatever,
sure,
you can replace it with literally anybody.
It wouldn't stun me
any color, any shape,
to see a death scene for Daniel Craig. It wouldn't stun me at all. Like, you know how...
I mean, yeah, if they did that, they could actually get away from the whole, it's the same Bond.
Wouldn't
stun
me.
Looks different.
Yeah. Yeah, it's the same guy, just looks a little... He's had a lot of plastic surgery.
That confused quite a few people when it went from Connery to...
Oh, I imagine Lazenby.
Roger Moore.
Yeah. Well, Lazenby was before.
Lazenby, yeah.
Yeah. I can't even... I imagine, like... As enlightened quotes as we are now, where I'm saying, like, I don't care if it's a coloured Bond or a fucking female Bond or whatever. I really don't care. I still imagine it being very tough in, like, 1970 or whenever it was that Connery walked away to be George Lazenby and then to be Roger Moore. That's a heavy shadow. I feel for those guys because back then, I reckon I would have reacted like, are you fucking kidding? Not my Bond.
Yeah.
You know, because I think back then it would have really been a shock to the system. And Sean Connery was so good. But he came back. He did Diamonds Are Forever after Lazenby. So he came back once. And he also came back in the 80s for Never Say Never Again.
Yeah.
So he came back twice. Okay. But, I mean, what an interesting situation. Roger Moore, I think, was a guy who he coped well with it, I thought. Like, because Sean Connery cast him, he would have heard all through the 70s, you're not Sean Connery. He would have heard that. How many times would Roger Moore have heard that?
Yeah,
and he deserved far better than that. He was a good Bond. He was great for the franchise.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah. I felt... He passed away, didn't he?
He did.
I felt quite sad, actually. I read it. Sean Connery gave him quite a touching tribute, actually. He was talking about... Because I always felt like he was... Because he was the Bond when I was growing up.
I mean, I liked that they were all around for Skyfall.
Yeah.
Which
you
was
said
50th
they
anniversary
had a, yeah.
of Bond, and they had the big promotional... Yeah. photo of every Bond.
That's cool.
And I loved that.
And they were in the room, weren't they? That wasn't like a bullshit Photoshop.
No, they were all there in the same room.
That's cool.
Which is fantastic.
That's cool.
I'm glad they made it to that kind of big milestone.
How cool is Sean Connery following the tennis tour now? He just follows the tennis tour and Andy Murray all the time. Like, he just doesn't give a fuck, does he, about anything. Like, he's such an old, grumpy Scotsman.
he's just a Scotsman, yeah.
Yeah. I love Sean Connery. I think he's one of the greatest. Now, Stu, I've got so many news items, I've almost lost myself here. But we're coming to, actually, an interesting one. Lucy Liu is directing the premiere episode of Luke Cage Season 2, Stu.
Yeah, I'm very cool with it.
I was down with that. It was a cool picture. Who was that? There was Luke Cage, the guy who plays Luke Cage. There was Lucy Liu, and who was the other black actor with him? Is that Luke Cage, a stuntman or something? Or was that... I didn't know who that actor was. I had no idea. And I guess I didn't research the article well enough. But there was another guy there with Luke Cage. It was Luke Cage, Lucy Liu, and someone else. And I was like, who's that? I don't know. I thought it might have been the stuntman, but maybe I'm just, you know, completely wrong.
I don't... He doesn't look familiar to me.
He didn't get a shout-out, did he? Yeah, interesting. But I'm down for that, Stu, because, I mean, Luke Cage is coming out. And, Stu, this ties into... Here's a news item that I'm very pumped up about, and this won't surprise you. Punisher is rumoured to appear on The Defenders, Stu. Now, Stu, I said to you this was likely, and you I believe, if we go back through the tapes, told me it wasn't likely. Well, it sounds like
the Punisher's not going to be there.
Yeah, you said he wouldn't be there, and I said it was quite likely. I believe that.
I'd review the tape. I mean, he's not a main character. He's not a defender.
No, just appearing, Stu.
But he'll be in it, yeah.
Okay, all right. I thought at the time you gave me one of your classic, not a chance, Dave. You're just kidding yourself. You Punisher convert over there, blah, 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 blah. But, I mean, my memory's vague, but I believe that we might have... I think we might even have had a bet about it, man. I really do. I think you went all in, dude. I'm lying.
I'm happy to pay up the $5 if that's what it was. I'll gladly put that money on the line, sure.
But I think...
Because I've got a feeling you've lost the next bet we made, so...
What was the next bet, Stu? There was a bet that I made that was just crazy.
We'll cover it. We'll do a segment on the next show, will we?
All right, we'll cover it next show. Because there's a couple of bets, and neither of them do I feel confident in my stomach. I feel like she took me to the cleaners in a moment. But, I mean, Punisher...
$10 worth.
Yeah, $10. Punisher, I know. Oh, it all hurts, Stu. I mean, come on. I'm over here fighting for creative rights.
I can buy 2.5 Marvel comics.
I'm funding lawsuits over here, Stu.
I can buy 2.5 Marvel comics for that.
Exactly.
You can't sneeze at that.
I forgot what I was going to say, but just the thought of Punisher. I mean, hell yeah. If Daredevil, fucking that clown Iron Fist, Luke Cage and Jessica Jones are fighting ninjas, Punisher turning up to show them what's what and, like, actually showing how to kill some people sounds to me like a perfectly acceptable. Like, you know, like, just... John Berthenol, like, showing up just to blow a few people away, then vanish again into the shadows? Hell yeah.
I'm picturing him as kind of the save of the day kind of character.
Yeah.
Who looks hopeless for the heroes, and then all of a sudden someone's heads explode.
Hail Mary sort of thing.
And then look up on the top of the building, and he's there with a smoking gun.
Have some choice words in Daredevil or something.
And he'll just throw a salute and then walk away.
Just walk away, just disgusted with them.
Yeah.
Yeah, that would fit with the character. Actually, Rebecca actually reached out to me. Rebecca Brogio from Fist of Conchu. She alerted me to Punisher's appearance in The Defenders by Bendis. It's 3 issues. I've actually picked them up on Comixology. I haven't read them yet, but apparently he appears in, like, issue 2 or something, and he's in issue 3 as well. She says it's quite a good appearance.
Absolutely, yeah.
She's looking out for my interest, Stu, because, you know, because I need a Punisher in my life, in current Punisher, because I'm not sure if the main title is supplying it. Now, Stu, turning to this item, the new Dark Tower trailer arrived. Now, Stu, I watched it yesterday. I'm intrigued. I wonder what a global audience is feeling towards this. What were your reactions to the trailer, Stu, and what do you think, like, the audience outside of, you know, the Stephen King fan base is thinking about this movie? Like, are you expecting big box office numbers here? Because it looks like it's an expensive movie to me.
I'm expecting some pretty decent numbers out of this movie. Like, okay. They're marketing it really well. It looks fantastic.
It was a good trailer. I thought it was a good trailer.
It looks like a pretty slick trailer.
Yeah. And, I mean, Idris Elba.
It's got big names. It's got Idris Elba. It's got Matthew McConaughey.
Yeah. Definitely.
Like, it's got everything I want from a fantasy movie.
Yeah, I know.
A couple of really good actors that are right in the meat of some of their best performances.
Oh, the McConaughey resurgence has been remarkable over the last 5 years.
The
McConaissance,
you know? Yeah.
What is it, McConaissance?
Yeah.
That's pretty funny. And, I mean, Idris Elba is just always class.
Yeah, he hasn't been in a bad performance ever.
What was I going to say to you? Have you read the books? Because I've only read about the first half of the first one.
I haven't read any of them.
I'm fascinated by it. I sort of want to read them. Like, I don't think you need to read. The character of Jack Sawyer that he's got in here is the character in The Talisman, which I've announced before. One of the things I find really awesome about Stephen King is he recycles a lot of his characters through different versions of his books, like Randall Flagg and stuff. Like, he uses...
Yeah.
Like, they're like versions of... It's very much like a multiverse. Like, they're versions of the same person sort of thing. Have you read The Stand?
I don't think so.
Because I sort of want to read The Stand. I've actually got it on a Kindle, and I sort of want to do that, you know, suck in the breath and actually go in and read a really big Stephen King book again, because I haven't done it for years. So I want to read, like, a classic. Because that's considered one of his all-time best.
Oh, I've got friends that are raving about Dark Tower that I should go out and read it. And
yeah, it's a lot of books. I've got like the first, probably, I probably got the first couple of paperbacks, but I lost most of my paperbacks when I moved. But I've got all of them on my Kindle. And I've sort of read about the first half of the first one isn't that great, to be honest. But it was written a long time ago. I believe they must get a lot better. Like, it's okay.
Yeah.
You know, like, it's, you sort of feel like you're at the ground floor.
So, I mean, I'd love to think that this is going to do something like a Hunger Games type.
Yeah.
Where it produces a few really solid movies, makes a lot of money.
Yeah.
Does really well.
I really hope it's not a flop, because I want to see sort of more of it. You know what I mean? Like, I'm going to go. I'm not going to pull a mummy. I'm going to actually go and support this. And I want to see it with, I want to see it with my own eyes. You know what I mean? Because
look, pretty much every time Idris Elba's in a movie, I'm pretty keen to go and see that.
Yeah, he's a good actor, isn't he?
He's fantastic.
Stu, turning to someone who I know you have your own thoughts on her acting, did you see the set photo of Amber Heard with Jason Momoa, like sort of linked together arm in arm?
I haven't.
She's so fucking hot in this picture, man. Like, she looks gorgeous as, and it's just a picture of her with great hair, and Jason Momoa's there, and there's another guy there as well. Again, the curse of the random guy turning up in the photo. Like,
okay, so to clear it up, in the first photo, he was the owner of a local cafe. That's where the owner took the photo. The cafe they were in when they took the photo.
Oh, because he's not a member of the cast.
He's not in the cast.
I heard that as a stunt guy.
he does look a little bit like Mike Coulter.
I thought that he has a future there. Pretty good photo for him to get, like Luke Cage, Lucy Liu, and him. Nice one. Good work.
Happy with that.
Nice research over there, Stu, too, by the way.
Took me a bit.
But I've got you under the pump here. I mean, Stu's been fielding questions. I don't know if listeners feel Stu's been under the pump recently. He came out just earlier this very show with some, I thought, almost slanderous comments towards me. But, you know, I kind of put it back in his place, back in his box. And he's over there doing his research now.
I can answer your next question as well, if you want.
Please answer, Stu, yeah.
It's James Wan. It's the director.
Oh, okay. Wow, Stu, you're just two for two.
This one, not as hard. Last one, that one threw me.
I do no research past the visual?
I love that you read the title of the article and then flick through to see the pictures, and then that's the research.
I saw Amber Heard looking fantastic, Stu. I mean, just pause for a moment to admire her beauty. And, you're on record for your comments that were hurtful.
She's a lovely shell of a person, but she is a shell.
Oh, my Lord.
She can't act to save herself.
I still haven't seen her in anything. You just don't remember. Nothing that I remember.
That's the worst thing you can say about an actor. I've seen you work, and I can't remember a single second of it.
Sorry.
You mean that
much?
You know
what acting I've seen her in? The acting where she apologised to the Australian government.
Some of her best acting. Yeah,
remember Johnny Depp? Australia takes it very seriously.
That was awful.
It was just like Johnny Depp. Like, Johnny Depp looked like he wanted to double down on the punishment. Like, he just looked like he just didn't give a fuck at all.
Yeah. Neither of them are coming back to Australia anytime soon.
Although she shot Aquaman here, I believe.
Was any of it shot in Australia? I thought it was all shot.
No, I think so, yeah. She was Amber Heard, if it wasn't Aquaman, it was something else. Yeah, she was shooting in Australia. Because she filmed with Johnny Depp when they stood together on the Pirates thing.
Yeah.
But she was shooting another movie, I think Aquaman, in Australia. Yeah, I do believe so.
Oh, okay.
So she has come back to Australia since that incident. Yeah, for sure. When I say for sure, I want to be clarifying.
Like 80% sure,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, 75 to 80.
75, it's going down quickly.
Yeah. It's somewhere around. Because I'm now starting to think, was it Johnny Depp who was here? And maybe it was. I mean, again, this is why they invented Google, Stu.
I mean, yeah.
This is why I hired Stu as well.
That's literally what I've just
opened up. Why they invented Google and why I hired Stu to really get to the bottom of these stories. Because, I mean, the audience out there is just living. Do you want me to go to the next news? I don't want you to look that up.
Sure, Dave.
Stu, because this is a news item I feel very strongly about, because I'm a big fan of the Muppets from when I was a kid. Like, I'm young enough to...
Who is it?
The Muppets ruled. The Muppets fucking ruled. Kermit ruled. Miss Piggy ruled. Swedish Chef ruled,
etc. I've got more good news. You were right.
Oh, yes!
Amber Heard was back in Queensland to film Aquaman.
Yes! I knew it, man. I knew it in my bones.
April this year.
Oh, yeah. I'm just getting more and more right. Oh, my God.
Yep, you're on a roll, Dave.
Amber Heard, I am available. And I'm not really available, but I'll make myself available.
Well, it's going to be tough when both her and Marissa Tomei come calling after hearing this podcast. That's going to be a difficult situation for you, Dave.
I'm flexible.
You better be if you've got both of them asking.
I'm flexible with very loose morals. Stu, and I mean, look... moving on from that situation. Look, I'm telling you, Marissa Tomei is a catch. Amber Heard's currently dating a billionaire, Stu. I don't really think even in a fantasy realm like that I'm any chance. She's dating a guy who's going to take people to Mars. You know? Don't send Amber. I don't care if the relationship goes. Don't send Amber on that suicide mission. Like, keep her on Earth, mate.
I wouldn't want to, because you'd have to send back vlogs of how life is, and you'd just get bored to tears watching them.
She wouldn't cope.
You'd never learn anything.
She wouldn't cope with the isolation.
Oh, she couldn't cope.
I don't think she'd make it there, actually. Like, doesn't it take, like, a couple of years to get there or something?
Take a while, yeah.
How long does it take, Stu? You're the science guy. Like, roughly.
Is it, I don't know. We've never sent a passenger craft there. So
okay, well, but I guess I'll have to have some theories when they send it off. It won't just be fucking like.
I mean, I imagine it's luck. Months.
Months.
I don't know if we're talking.
Do they have to line it all up?
Oh yeah.
Okay.
You've got windows of like a day kind of thing.
Right. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Cool. I mean, I wonder. Well, we did cover this on a previous show, but how close is this happening? Is this in the next 10 years that like this guy's going to send a thing? Is he allowed to do that? Just send like.
I mean, Richard Branson said that by the end of this year, Virgin Galactic's going to be up and running.
What's that?
That's his space program.
Wow.
You can buy a ticket on a plane and it'll take you into space.
Yeah, but that's just to go up in space and to come back down again, isn't it?
Well, yeah, but that's the start.
Okay.
When we can actually get people that aren't astronauts going into space.
I'd do it, actually. Fuck it. Why not?
I'd love to do it.
Fuck it.
That's a big step forward in humans.
I suppose so. What about if you get like Houston, we've got a problem. Like Branson, we've got a problem. That could be a fucking public relations nightmare.
Yeah, but it's the same as like the first airline that took someone across across an ocean just for money, and they weren't themselves a pilot.
Yeah.
Like look at what that's happened in the last 100 years. We've gone from nothing to now it's so commonplace to jump on a plane.
Yeah. True. Good point, Stu.
Look at the next 100 years, maybe we're jumping in a shuttle to go to the moon shuttle to go to Mars or something, you know, who knows?
I'd be down for Mars. The moon's not that interesting to me. I mean, I'm not... the moon is like the moon. I mean, I don't care about the moon. Mars, hell yeah. I go to Mars. I'll be honest.
I'm curious to know what you think the difference is between the moon and Mars.
Mars is bigger and not as boring. Like, and plus...
What do you mean not as boring? They're both just rock.
I kind of hold some hopes.
Like, if you're a scientist, there's a lot of stuff on Mars that you want to be there for, but...
Yeah. I'm a scientist.
We're not going to get little green men. We're not going to get the...
I believe...
We're not going to get a tiller.
Yeah,
like,
maybe. Okay, well, come back to
land
me.
On the dark side of the moon.
I'm thinking of the Doctor Who episode Pyramids of Mars.
Well, they've got the whole Martian race that live underground there.
Yeah, that's one of my favourite Tom Baker episodes, and in my mind, that's kind of what's happening on Mars. So, you know, I've got my own
theories. I feel you might be... really disappointed if you ever get a ticket, but
I feel it's out of my price range, frankly.
Definitely out of the price range.
Definitely. I want to bring them down. I'm not going to be one of those guys who's paying top
dollar. Who knows? Maybe in 50 years it'll be cheap enough that you and I can jump on a shuttle. And
by that point, I'll be so old if I'm still alive
a day trip.
That I won't care. You know, like...
Oh, you'll be excited for that, though.
Yeah, I know. Won't care.
That's a big deal.
Won't care if we live or die, is what I'm saying. Like, I'll be on that death wish kind of style thing by that point. You know,
and bungee jumping is just not enough for Dave.
No, it's just not enough. I've got a bad name.
It's Mars or nothing.
It's Mars or nothing. Put me on another planet. I want to die. I want to plant the Aussie flag. You know what I'm saying?
You want to just die on another planet.
Die on another planet. I've had enough of Earth.
That's fantastic.
I've had enough of Earth.
That's so good. I love that.
Why not, man? Fuck it.
I've spent 80 years on this planet. I'm out. I'm done. Put me on the red one.
Exactly. Now, Stu, we started to report the news item before we got distracted by Mars. Steve Whitmire, Muppeteer for Kermit the Frog, has lost his gig after 27 years. He took over voicing Kermit after Jim Henson died in 1990, and he's been voicing Muppets, including some guys in the band, the Muppets band, those legends.
Yeah, with Animal.
I think he did Rizzo the Rat as well.
Oh,
one of the greatest characters. So this guy's been involved in the franchise since 78. He's done Kermit since 1990, and frankly, I haven't noticed that Kermit's not the original voice. And
oh, you didn't?
Oh, maybe I have, but
it took me a little while to get over that.
Yeah, probably, but I am over it. But I'm not fucking feeling this, man. This is... This
Do we
is...
have any details as to why he's left?
I researched this. I'm proud to say I read the article.
The whole article?
Yeah, I did. And well, no, we don't. Disney, apparently he lost the job in roughly about October or something, 2016. He tried to... He kept saying remedy, whatever the concerns they had. So, but Disney said nothing other than we wish him well in the future. So there's right. no reason. He was fired.
So there seems to be something that he's done.
Something he's done. I mean, or was he grinding for more money? Who knows? Like, the show wasn't a success. Like, the new Muppet show wasn't a success. You know, the one where they foolishly divorced Miss Piggy and Kermit.
Yeah, and the movies haven't been doing well.
Yeah, so... But I don't know if I blame that on the guy versus Kermit. But, you know...
No, but who knows? I mean, there might have been something that he did that...
Oh, yeah.
They just said, exactly, they can't keep you on.
And he kept saying his statement.
He's saying that he wants to remedy it.
Like, what
means he's
done?
The problem?
Yeah, it sounds like it, doesn't it? To me, it reeks of, like, this is maybe a guy who got a bit too comfortable in the role. And they're like, well, guess what? We already fucking, the original creator died and we replaced him. We can replace the replacement. You're replaceable.
Oh,
mate.
Look, it's Hollywood. Like, no one's replaceable.
We replaced Jim Henson. We can replace you. Like, yeah. No one even knows who you are. People even knew who Jim Henson was.
Yeah.
But, I mean, Kermit was still sounded pretty good. Like, what do you... I liked the movies. I didn't really enjoy the show. The whole thing with Miss Piggy divorcing Kermit, I just didn't feel like it was necessary. Like, they always had a tempestuous relationship.
It's just trying to add some conflict. I don't...
But they had heaps of conflict. Like, Miss Piggy was always an incredible bitch.
Yeah.
Like, Miss Piggy was never this, like, nuanced, like, nice character. She was always a... But he was shacking up with, like, a younger female pig, and I thought that was in poor taste. Like...
Yeah, I don't know. I think they're trying to modernise it.
But did you...
It doesn't really work.
Yeah, but come on. The fact...
I liked the movies.
I liked the movies. I had no problems with the movies.
I didn't love the movies. Jason Segel ones.
I liked that one. And the Ricky Gervais one, or was he?
Yeah, Ricky Gervais was in the more recent.
The telephone one. I quite like that one.
Yeah,
where they had to raise the money, and they went nowhere near it.
Yeah,
like I also liked the original movies they did, like Muppets Take Manhattan, and the one with Gonzo when you find he's an alien and stuff.
They were so good,
dude. I was so
grew up with those movies,
dude. I was so stoned.
Of course,
the one where Gonzo.
I'm watching them innocently as like a 5-year old.
No. This was one of the later movies. The one where Gonzo finds out he's an alien, dude. I was so fucking wasted when I saw that. Like, I was like, fuck, we finally got the mystery of Gonzo. And afterwards, I was like, what the fuck am I thinking? Like, I never for one moment was like. Even thought about what Gonzo was.
Until that moment, you hadn't lost a second of sleep about what is Gonzo.
Like, Gonzo was the shit character who came out and always, like, fucked things up. Like, remember, on the original Muppet Show, wasn't Gonzo the guy who could never get his act together? He always had, like, sort of...
Yeah, he was always the hopeless guy.
Yeah. And you weren't going, like, scratching your head on Gonzo. When they made Gonzo an alien and all that, I was like, what the fuck is happening? Like,
I always thought he was a blue flamingo.
Yeah, sort of a bird character of some sort.
Like, I just went, oh, he's blue. Okay.
But, like...
It's the Muppets. But, like, I'm not watching that for realism.
No, but that's where I feel they started to go a bit wrong. Like, if someone had dug Jim Henson up out of his grave, who, by the way, only died because he had some crazy religious thing where he couldn't take, like, aspirin. Did you know that? Like, Jim Henson died of some pretty minor complaints that he didn't get treated because he was in some religion where they... It was like...
He couldn't take medicine.
Take medicine and stuff. And he died of some relatively, you know... benign problem. It's quite sad, really, because Jim Henson was a genius, man.
Yeah.
But anyway...
He's not smart enough to work his way out of that religion.
Oh, and don't say this around the Jim Henson lovers. There's a real cult around the Jim Henson side of things where they consider him... There are people out there who consider him like a sort of a modern-day messiah. Seriously.
Oh, look, anyone that kind of died after creating something that's lasted like that long...
And Labyrinth, dude. That was Jim Henson.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
That pretty was fantastic.
Cool. Pretty fucking cool.
That was fantastic.
But do the Muppets themselves, did he also, I always get confused, did the Muppets, like, in Sesame Street, is that Jim Henson as well, like Bert and Ernie? Are they, they're him as well, aren't they? I get confused. Like, Kermit's him, Bert and Ernie's him, but, like, are all the Sesame Street characters him? Like, is Snuffleupagus him?
I think so.
That's pretty fucking awesome. Is Big
Bird
haven't
actually looked into it, but I think so. This is could be completely wrong.
Is Big Bird him? Because Big Bird's just a guy in a suit. It's not really a Muppet.
I don't know.
Spoilers, kids, by the way, if you're young. I don't mean to, like,
oh,
really
Dave, you just ruined, like...
Dude, Fucking
if they're still watching Sesame Street and they're listening to this podcast, you're in the wrong place.
I remember one episode of The Muppets, like very vaguely, where Bert and Ernie were on it, and I fucking blew my mind as a young kid. I was like, this is the best crossover I've ever seen in my life. Like, but like Cookie Monster's a Muppet, so he must have some. The Jim Henson Studios must have had some relationship because it's all owned by Disney now, I believe. I think Sesame Street's owned by Disney as well. So it's all in the same corporate umbrella now. But I wonder at the time if he licensed, you know, Muppets for Sesame Street. Because Sesame Street originally was like an educational show.
Still is.
Yeah, but more so. Like it was like PBS, like, you know what I mean? Like it was heavy on the education aspect.
Yeah, it still is.
Is it really?
Yeah.
I thought it was more like they were telling stories now. Like it was more soap opera-y now.
No, it's still education, but it's now on equal rights and... Right. Don't treat people different because there's autism and different stuff. Color and
I did see that you've got like the autism Muppet now and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, so it's, I don't know, it's not teaching as in
how
like
do they do? Can I ask
what you? Number comes after four? It's teaching as in what do you do when you meet someone that's different from you?
Remember the five? They had some of the shit like 70s animation. Like you're like, here we go again. Like even as a kid, you're like, seriously, like we have to fucking claw our way through. Where's Cookie Monster? That was always me.
I know, right? Cookie Monster and Bert and Ernie.
Yeah, Bert and Ernie were the classic. That was the best.
They were fantastic.
But, okay, so they just sort of do sort of more like... Remember they had the HOV Muppet back in the 90s or something made some news?
I don't remember that.
Really? They had like a HOV positive Muppet, yeah, back in the 90s. They sort of like...
It's pretty full on for a kids show.
Yeah, well, it's all about raising awareness, isn't it? Like, you've got to start them young. Like, I mean...
Look, it's all about don't treat people differently because of...
Yeah, race.
The way they look or the way they colour. Act or all this sort of stuff. Like
sexuality, I guess, at a certain point.
Well, yeah, that's kind of more what they're looking into now. It's more diverse. It's more about...
It's a pretty good idea, actually. I actually love that. I must admit, I honestly will say, we make a lot of jokes on this show. I sometimes am pretty un-PC, but I actually love that the Muppets... You laugh, shit, but it's actually true.
Oh, it's very true. Yeah.
I don't say very true. I'd say once or twice in my career hasn't been like said, or at least you know, said that I'm un-PC. But I do like the Muppets at least try to do that. But I didn't rate... I'll tell you what I didn't rate. Like, Miss Piggy was always a bitch to Kermie, and which is fair enough. That was her character. But when he shacked up with a younger Piggy, I thought that sent the wrong message to viewers. Like, who are they trying to... Like, I was, like, uncomfortable. Like, if I was a parent with my kids, I'm like, yeah, he's now fucking a younger pig. I don't know. How do I explain that to my kid? Like, yeah, he went with Piggy, but now he's got a younger Piggy. That was uncomfortable to me. I had a real problem with that. Like, I just felt they were trying to go... Like, who are they trying to actually get to watch the Muppets? Like, it's not really adults, is it?
Well, yeah, a lot of this is, like, tongue-in-cheek humour for adults.
Yeah.
While they tell a story for the kids, the adults get a whole nother level of comedy.
But the recent Muppet show was more tailored towards adults, I thought, from what I saw. It looked like it was trying to be.
I think if you watched it as an adult, you get a completely different movie as if you watched it as a kid.
Dude, bring back Muppets in Manhattan.
Like, as an adult, like, when the band came out and Dave Grohl was the drummer, I love that.
That's gold. That's gold.
Like, that's...
Was Animal still involved?
Yeah, Animal's still there, but it's Animal and Dave Grohl. Like, that's the two greatest drummers of all time.
That's genius.
As if you wouldn't want that in a movie.
The Muppets band was one of the greatest. I did a thing recently. I shared it. I think I shared it on Signal on Facebook. It's Sam the Eagle, who I always loved. And
of course you did.
I was always a big...
It's such a Dave character.
Sam the Eagle was like so serious and so funny.
Yeah.
But he came out and they start doing Star Spangled Banner, but it's the Muppets like band, like the chick, you know, the really stoned guy.
Yeah,
the
really with the bandana on. Yeah.
And the hippie chick with the sort of like, I think she's got like a headband or something.
Yeah.
And she's really out of it. And they come out and do Star Spangled Banner with just sort of like whistles or something, or a recorder or something. And Sam at first is trying to shut them down, and then by the end of it he's like sobbing and like, this is beautiful. It's a great one.
Classic Muppets.
I'll put it back on Signal of Doom because I put it up there the other day and I just couldn't stop it. But dude, I want to quote this guy before we finish up with the Muppets. This was the guy, Steve Whitmire, who got fired. "For me, the Muppets are not just a job or a career or even a passion. They are a calling, an urgent, undeniable, impossible to resist way of life," he wrote. "This is my life's work since I was 19 years old. I feel that I'm at the top of my game, and I want all of you who love the Muppets to know that I would never consider abandoning Kermit." That's from the heart, man, isn't it?
Yeah, that sounds like a guy that's fucked up.
Yeah,
and now he's just trying to claw any sense of dignity he's got left.
I think he's left dignity behind.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
Yeah, I would never.
Whatever
consider.
He did must have been pretty bad.
Yeah, yeah.
If he's issuing apologies like that. Like, no one says that if they've just, like, shown up late for work one day.
He's done something, hasn't he?
He's done something bad.
I don't know what
like,
he did.
Possibly he, like, should be in jail.
Piss on Jim Henson's grave or something? Or did he say, like, I reckon I'm bigger than Henson, and they've said, you're out, you're done?
I reckon it's something worse.
Something worse than that, man?
Yeah. He's done something bad.
Tried to hit on Piggy again?
It could have. It could be something like a sexual harassment lawsuit behind the scenes, yeah.
Dear me.
It's something where you don't want him back.
Now, Stu, actually, that kind of covers a lot of what we've got. We've actually still got more news items here. There were some announcements, Stu, that I was tracking during the week regarding Legacy.
Yeah,
which is Marvel Legacy, the creative teams. There's an article that sort of links up a lot of the minor teams. I know Victor Glisher is his name. He's attached to Spirits of Vengeance, sort of a 90s throwback. Cable 150 was announced. This is interesting. He forms new missions back in the past. So right. It's like Cable, from what I read, from what I understood, Cable has gone back in time to like the 70s. And he's getting mutants that he knows from later on, but when they're younger. And sort of bringing them into the fold earlier. Sounds like he's really fucking with the timeline. Like, yeah, it's kind of like...
They're not getting this thing right, are they?
It's like, I'm like, okay, I don't know, it's just... that's, to me, sounds like, I guess... It's just an interesting thing. So that's Cable 150. Have you got the news item there, Stu, with all the creative teams? I've linked it there. It's a lot of lesser titles... but it's somewhat interesting. Well, it's not like the big titles. It's like, you know, they've got you covered if you like, you know, new Ultimates or something. Like, if you're hanging out for the new, you know, fucking Champions book or something like that. Like, if you're after Kitty Avengers, well, they've got that covered for you. If you want to know who's writing Spider-Man, you're fresh out of luck. Have you got the article there, Stu? Is it?
No, I don't.
Okay, well, fuck the article. But it's pretty boring. It's all the titles you don't care about have been announced so far. Like, basically. Like, it's a lot of... I'd encourage, if anyone cares, go check out a Newsarama. IGN. They've got announcements of all the Legacy titles and... that are so far released, but I believe at San Diego they'll announce a lot more. So by next show,
I'm sure at Comic-Con there's going to be a lot of news.
Yeah, and we can do some proper ones then. Stu, this is interesting. The new Warriors TV show, the role's been cast as Squirrel Girl, and she's an actress who is the ATT girl in the States, I believe. And she looked good to me. Yeah, she's pretty hot, man. Like, curvy. Well, fuck. I'm reporting the news, Stu. She's pretty hot and she's curvy. I'm sorry, but she is. Like, and the character...
I love that pretty hot is now news. That's great.
Oh, well.
Standards are dropping in news.
There were pockets, Stuart.
Lois Lane's not at her peak.
Lois Lane's fucking had to fight her way through the news. Like, Lois Lane never had to give a news report where someone's, like, vocally abusing her during the news report, which happens all the time.
Lois Lane has also never referred to someone as pretty hot.
Well, she probably said about Superman, he's pretty fine.
Not
pretty fly for a
while.
I can't remember on his report, yeah. There were pockets of people saying that she wasn't, quote, average enough looking to play Squirrel Girl, which to me is an eye roll inducing comment. Like,
yeah, they're just picking fights now.
Yeah, it's just, when I say pockets, I believe it was like a few people, you know, who thought that, like, the fictional character of fucking Squirrel Girl wasn't accurately represented, like, with the actress. I'm like, she didn't have a fucking tail? Like, you know, like, a squirrel's got, like, a tail, like, my cat's got a massive tail. Like, you know, you're the actress. What do you think about the show, by the way, Stu? New Warriors. It's a free form. It's a comedy. We haven't seen a trailer or anything, have we? They haven't really started shooting at
all.
No,
there's not a lot of stuff that's come out.
Mm. How are you feeling for it over there? Is it something that you'll watch?
I mean, I'll give anything a try.
It's a sitcom comedy. I mean, I'm sort of thinking it could be funny.
It could be. Well, I'll give it a try, but it's not something...
Well, I mean, I quite like Squirrel Girl. I don't have any problems with Squirrel Girl. Like, I think if they make her the sort of, like, face of it and, like, they keep it lighthearted, it could be good, you know?
Well, yeah,
I mean,
sure.
There's plenty of good comedies out there that you wouldn't, on the initial pitch, think, oh, fuck, that's a great comedy. Now, Stu, here's a news item that I actually am troubled by. The Steppenwolf actor has never met the JL cast, the Justice League cast.
Yeah, which when I first heard it, I was like, are you serious? How have they never met? But
yeah,
Now that I've thought about it, neither did Bradley Cooper playing Rocket Raccoon in Guardians.
Because he did it all just as a voice.
Everything's mocap, everything. Like, they had another actor on set.
Right.
They had James Gunn's brother.
Right.
Who played Kraglin in the film.
Right.
He wore the mocap suit and did the motion capture for Rocket.
Oh, really?
And Brad Cooper just did the face, the expressions and the voice.
Okay.
So they never met. A lot of characters on animated films, they never meet.
Oh, yeah. If you're just voicing it. If we're saying actor and he's the voice actor, then...
So, I mean, what this means is we're never going to see Steppenwolf outside of his, like, boss mode armor.
Right, yeah.
Fighting these
guys. Did you see the Lego stuff or something was announced? There was some toys that sort of showed him. The design of him. Yeah.
Yeah, and we've seen a little clip. Of him,
yeah. In the what do you call it? It was cut from the film, but it was shown. They showed deleted scenes.
Yeah, it was in Man of Steel, I think, wasn't it?
Yeah. No. It was in Batman Superman.
It was in BBS. Yeah.
Yeah. Look, I'm down for it. I thought it was interesting at first. I mean, I wonder how much, because didn't we establish Steppenwolf is like the lieutenant of Darkseid, isn't he?
He's one of the lieutenants. He's Darkseid's uncle.
Uncle. I keep thinking son, but uncle.
No, uncle.
Uncle. That's interesting, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a bit of a weird relationship.
Weird relationship. Of Darkseid, like, I mean...
But he's the military commander of Darkseid's kind of forces.
Cool. Because I know he's got a torturer called the Sard or something. If I remember from my 90s comics. He's got this crazy torturer.
Yeah, so Darkseid's got a group of maybe five kind of key henchmen.
Granny Goddess or something?
Something like, I can't remember them.
They're crazy. They're crazy. Yeah,
but they've all got their own kind of separate roles.
Cool.
And Steppenwolf kind of controls military. The armies and is the military strategist.
Which makes sense. Strategist the advanced force is coming. Steppenwolf's control.
Well, yeah, and I think he's showing up to kind of assess how much of a threat Earth is.
This won't come as news to anyone, really, but I'm so fucking pumped for this movie.
It's going
to
be good.
Just talking about it, like, it feels like we've been so caught up with Wonder Woman and then Spider-Man.
Like, I know it feels bad, but I've been waiting just to get through Wonder Woman and Spider-Man to get to the last three movies of the year.
I dig it, man. There's no judgment here. I know you were waiting for Thor Ragnarok.
For Thor, Justice League, and Episode 8 of Star Wars. I'm so pumped for those three movies.
What a time to be alive. It feels like only an hour ago I was decrying corporate media, like, with passion, but now I'm sort of back on the fucking page.
Oh, I'm all over it.
I'm all over it. Actually, don't take my comments here seriously, Warners. I'm still available if you want me for a press screening. I'll give you... I'll put aside all my integrity. Are you saying what integrity?
I was going to, but I didn't. I held back.
Stu, I actually... Last week we had the Random Weekly Controversy, which whipped up, like, about four emails and, like, essay-length answers. But we've actually got a discussion point, Stu. And I hope you've read your homework.
I like this one.
Thank you.
I really
didn't write it. I haven't actually 100% read it, but I've read most of it.
Oh, see? Oh, come on.
No, I have read it. I have read it. So the discussion point, Stu... coming up this week, and readers feel free to, or listeners feel free to write in if you've got your own views. It's what is anime succeeding with that US comics aren't supplying? Because they're talking, I guess, about like anime and manga as well.
Yeah,
both things. I guess if you read the article title, that's in the title. As opposed to what US comics like. So if I go to Kinokuniya, which I go to often. They've got a heavy normal comic section or, you know, US comics, but they've got a very heavy, like, rows and rows and rows of manga as well.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, and to be honest, they're often populated by more people than the US comics. So,
This article's talking about the crowds at anime and manga conventions as opposed to Comic-Con and how a lot of readers are shifting over.
Yeah.
Not even just supplementing, but actually just switching allegiances and going, I don't want to read comics, I want to read manga or...
How much manga have you read? I've read all of Kenshin, and I haven't read too much else other than that, but I loved Kenshin.
I haven't read a lot. I've seen more anime than I've read manga.
Got it. Yeah. Looks pretty good to me. I do find that sometimes the anime is a little slow for my tastes, if you know what I mean. Like, I love it, what I've watched. Like, I've watched all of Claymore. I haven't watched a lot, but sometimes I feel it's a bit slow for me. But then when I read Kenshin, I consider that one of the greatest reads of any comics I've ever read ever, Western or fucking anything else.
Yeah, I think the main difference for me is more the sense of humour and the way the characters are kind of portrayed. I mean, I'm so used to the Western style that it's it's always a bit of a shock for me to go towards something
it's
like
manga. It's a complete different experience.
It is. But I've got friends that have told me to go to crunchyroll.com.
Yep.
We can get English versions that come out hours after the...
Is this an anime or what?
Yeah, it's all manga.
Okay. Cool.
But they translate the originals within the hour that it gets released in Japan.
That's good.
So you're right up to date with worldwide. You know, you don't have to wait 3 weeks for a dubbed version.
It'd be interesting for us to do some on the show, I think. Because neither of us are at all experienced. I've read Kenshin, like, all the way through. But that's a pretty westernized one, I think.
Yeah, see, I've watched more. So, I mean, Dragon Ball Z, Pokemon.
Yep.
Bleach.
Got it. Death Note?
No, some Cowboy Bebop.
Oh, I've watched a bit of Cowboy Bebop. I like Cowboy Bebop.
Yeah. So,
Cowboy Bebop's cool.
I mean, a lot of them are kind of the more westernized
versions. They've really crossed over.
But look, I'm totally open to reading.
There's lots of weird ones, like ones about like guys who play tennis, like Prince of Tennis or something it's called, or people who fucking sew or something. Like, they do all sorts of weird random ones.
Oh, yeah.
Like, it's just, to me, I'm like, I'm not like, oh my God, I can't believe they're doing it. I'm sort of more like, oh, that's interesting. Like, they've obviously got an audience to do it.
But I mean, by the same token, we've got characters like Squirrel Girl in comics. Like,
yeah,
I need a Squirrel Girl comic?
Well, for a long time, no one, but she like, for a long time, she was a supporting character in the Avengers, but then she became popular
amongst the Tumblr crowd. It's the same way with this manga.
Yeah.
If there's a demand for it, then it'll show up.
The interesting thing about this article, though, is it points to some very relevant topics, and this is something that, like, my friend Dion, okay, who has read a lot of manga and anime, and of course thinks he's an expert on everything, we all know that.
Oh, of course.
He will often say, and they cite in this article, one of the strengths is that you can go, I want to read, you know, Claymore, and it's like, say, 40 issues, you know, X many books that they release them in.
Yeah.
And then you read it, and that's the whole experience, and you've read it all. Now, I understand that, whereas if you go, I love Deadpool, it's kind of like you're going to the store. Where the fuck do I start?
Yeah.
You know? Like, if I...
Oh,
just,
yeah.
You know.
The numbering and the naming system is completely screwed
and
up.
Diving even further, there's a million creators. There's like, say, let's say there's at least probably 25 to 40 creators who've worked on Deadpool. There's no one tone. There's like Jerry Duggan has done it, and he's got his own tone. Joe Kelly had his own tone. But there's so many people who try their hand at it that, I can appreciate being like, what the fuck am I doing?
Whereas, it's far more confusing than it is in manga.
Yeah.
Manga is way more straightforward. It's much easier to join if you don't know anything.
Mm.
You can go, this title looks interesting, let's start at issue one.
One thing I want is more... one thing I've always wanted is... more guides. Like, I'm like, okay, I really like fantasy kind of manga and stuff, or something like that. Like, Kenshin was kind of right in my sweet spot.
Mm-hmm.
I sort of want to get someone going to me, if you like Kenshin, you'll really like this. I need that kind of prompt, because I'm as lost when I go to the manga section.
Well, I'll tell you who, if you want to get in contact with someone, Tom Reeves, the guy that emailed me.
Oh, yeah?
He and his wife, Michelle, have read more of manga and watched more anime than anyone else I know.
Well, he should write in with some suggestions, man.
So, Tom, if you're still listening.
Tom! Genius, the guy who agreed with me.
The guy who agreed with me.
So we should do more hypotheticals.
We should get him on the show then.
Yeah, we definitely should. We'd be happy to. Why not?
Let's get this ball rolling.
There you go, Tom. Was this all a ploy to get Tom on the show? Have I fallen into your spider web over there?
I wish I was that clever. I wish that I'd played this slow ball.
You could have just asked me.
Weeks of planning. You had to subtly
trick me. Stu, I've put here a news item that I'm not even sure what it is. Something about Spider-Man Homecoming sequel. I don't even know. I've not put any information other than that. There's a news item that Dave's put in the show notes that I have no idea what it is, so we might have to just keep moving on with our lives.
Okay, so the article is that the director hasn't signed for a sequel.
Oh, really?
It's the same as like a Patty Jenkins scenario where the movie's done better than they thought.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden...
John Watts, I believe is his name.
Yeah, John Watts.
Do you know that the... I'll tell you a little tidbit. Do you ever watch... Criminal Minds. No, it's Bones. I'm struggling to remember this. Yes. The actor in one of the actors in Bones, one of the supporting actors in Bones, he has directorial ambitions, and he's one of the writers of the screenplay on Spider-Man, and he also directed like Vacation. And he left Bones because they just couldn't allow him to give the amount of time off that he needed to do these projects.
Okay.
And he's a long... He's like... I'm not sure of his name. He's quite good on Bones. One of Michelle's shows. And he's kind of like a bit of a sidekick character, quite young. Kind of the brainy character. He was a pretty decent actor. And he'd been in the show for ages. And they had to write him out because they just couldn't come to terms. Because he co-wrote... I think he's got a writing partner. And together they did Vacation, directed it, which did terribly. But I believe he co-wrote the screenplay with his partner for Spider-Man Homecoming.
Right.
So I guess we could, again, Dave could research that a bit heavier so we could get some actual names attached. But, hey, some tidbits, Stu, you know?
Yeah. So, John Watts, like you said, he's got a quote here. He said, "For me, it's one movie at a time." He's not interested in signing up for multiple movie deals.
He wants to get paid.
I think he wants to get paid, yeah.
Big fucking cash.
But I think it's also, it's not limiting for him. He can...
No. He's done Spider-Man Homecoming. I mean, there's nothing saying he needs to do the sequel, which is years away, if you think about it.
Well, he's also got written here, "I can't wait to see Avengers Infinity War."
Sure.
"Because I know what they're doing, but I don't know the specifics. Mm-hmm. I feel like Tom with Spider-Man in this Marvel Universe, we've just scratched the surface of what we can do."
Agreed. Agreed.
Yeah, and Tom Holland has gone on the record and said, "I want John back to direct the sequel."
Sure.
So a lot of people are saying they want him back.
John said, "Pay me. Add some more zeros to that fucking number."
Yeah, and good on him. Go for it.
Yeah, go for it, man. Yeah,
Patty Jenkins.
Strike while the iron's hot.
If you're good enough to produce a movie that's that good,
yeah,
you deserve to get paid more.
Definitely agree with you. Stu, I guess you'd be interested by this news item that really it's just a comment. Thor Ragnarok will change the MCU drastically before Infinity War.
Yeah, so not entirely surprising news.
No, it's kind of shaken up a bit.
I feel like what they're hinting at is there's going to be a death of a reasonably major character.
I also thought that, you know where I'm going to go? The direction of the Grandmaster, played by Jeff Goldblum. Because he's a cosmic character, man. And there might be some cosmic ramifications, because he's at the stadium, isn't he, when they're watching?
Oh, yeah, he's riddled throughout
the movie. And he's the brother of the Collector.
Yeah.
I know that from Ultimate Spider-Man.
Well done.
And do they play on a cosmic scale? So could there be an appearance of Thanos that you're not anticipating or something like that?
Look, there could well be, but they've kind of already said that this is a... It's not connected that heavily.
Yeah, but they say that, Stu, but, like, that could be part of the fucking, you know, bait and
switch. They've normally been pretty faithful with that. Like, when they said Guardians 2 wasn't connected that heavily, it really wasn't.
Sure.
So I'm expecting it not to be that heavily connected, but...
So you think a death of a major character, like death of the Hulk or something?
I don't think it's going to be that major a character.
No.
I'm thinking more like Jane Foster or...
Oh, Jesus. That's not that major. I mean, she was barely in... Is she even in it? I don't think she's in it, man.
Oh, who knows?
Natalie Portman, I believe, is not
in this film. I'm assuming when it ends, they'll either get back to Earth...
Oh, God, the Jane Foster in the comics I like. Jane Foster in the movies has been a wet blanket.
I mean, they might just be referring to the fact that Mjolnir is going to get blown up and he's going to get the ultimate axe or whatever.
Is Katie Jennings going to be in it?
Kat Jennings?
Oh, fuck, she's hot.
Of course she is, Dave.
Oh, come
maybe.
On.
I don't know, maybe.
Come on.
I doubt she's going to be there if Jane Foster's not.
I suppose so.
Because she's the assistant to Jane.
I know who I prefer. Like, I mean, shoot me down, internet, but, I mean, she's a pretty attractive young lady and, you know, she's done some good work in Two Broke Girls and I've watched about 5 minutes of that show ever and I'd like to see more of her in Thor. And just definitely I'd like to see Thor switch it up and maybe go with the assistant. Why not?
Oh, Dave.
I mean, it's not going to happen.
It wouldn't feel right. It'd be like Kermit going with a younger frog. It just doesn't feel right.
Sometimes what, you know, can feel so wrong, it's right. Sometimes
you can justify that.
I just find her very attractive. But anyway, regardless, I don't feel they're going to move in that direction.
You remind me of the boss from the IT Crowd.
What is he doing? I don't even know what that is.
Go back and watch that series.
Yeah. I want to go on record as saying, like, I don't know what planet you're living on, Stu. You're acting over this. Anyone would think she's a priest. He's showing absolutely no reaction to your instrument. Jane Foster was a wet blanket through two movies. Good actress, Natalie Portman, given a very, very boring
role. Not disagreeing with you. She wasn't great in those movies.
No, I agree.
I'd be fine if she died.
Kat Jennings was, I thought, pretty decent in those movies. She was funny, at least. She made me laugh. She did Mew Mew, whatever it's called, for Mulnir, which I struggle to say as well. But,
yes, yeah, that didn't...
Oh, I liked that. I liked that. But anyway, it's not going to happen. It's more of me just kind of like dreaming of casting decisions rather than really being actively involved in the process and really chasing it. Like, you know, I always like to see, I like to see a young girl like her succeed as well in a tough industry. Now, anyway, so the next item on our agenda, Stu, is after the Harley Quinn and Batman movie, the next movie is animated movie from DC has been announced, which is going to be Gotham with Gaslight, which is really interesting. Because that's the Mike Mignola, or how do you say his name? Mike, the creator of Hellboy. He did Gotham with Gaslight, which is kind of like a Victorian age steampunk sort of style Batman story.
Yeah, Mike Mignola.
Mike Mignola.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, very. And I mean, it's just such a cool Elseworlds tale, and that's be the next one after Batman and Harley, which I'm looking forward to.
Cool with that.
Oh, dude, I love their animated movies. Dude, what about that fucking 40, remember that 40 DVD set or something? Of like all the...
Yeah, that entire collection.
Jesus. Like, I mean, if only there was like a benefactor who would just give that to me, I would be so fucking friendly towards them. Like if someone, imagine if you're a kid and your parent gave you that. Like, fuck off, basically. Like, like there's some jealousy in my, you know, kind of expression. Well, here.
But I don't know. I reckon if I put that on my Christmas list, I could, you know, start hoping now.
Who's going to give it to you? 40 DVDs. Like,
it's one box. That's got to count for something.
I guess just put it out there to the audience.
It's easy to wrap on. But,
yeah, okay. If anyone wants to give Stu that, like, feel free. Go ahead. Like, you know, like, I mean, think of who's your favourite host. You know, think of D-Finn and all the comedy I bring and all the news ready I bring. Yeah, I mean, I'll toss you a DVD, Stu. I'll toss you a couple that I don't like. Like, you know, just flick them over to you. You can have these ones, mate. I don't really want them. Like,
you're a generous guy.
Like, Superman.
And to think I was going to share my $50 million.
Oh, no. That's right. I forgot about the $50 million. Oh. Hey, by the way. Put it this way. If don't play favourites. Give us one each. Give us one each. We bring the show to you on a weekly basis. We supply the comedy and also the news. I mean, are you getting this news anywhere else?
Do you know the only person that says don't play favourites?
Who?
The one that's not the favourite.
Yeah, I don't feel I'm the favourite. I feel I'm judged for my constant comments about, like, you know, Squirrel Girl and Cat Jennings.
You're definitely the favourite. People always love the crazy guy. That's true of everything.
wrapping up the final news item and what has been an extensively long news segment, there was some interesting stuff about... Remember we were talking about Spider-Man 4 and Sam Raimi's Spider-Man 4?
Yeah, what he didn't get to do in the end.
And it was going to be Vulture. And who was it? Vulture and someone else. It was Vulture and Scorpion or something like that, I think it was going to be.
Scorpion sounds right.
Vulture was definitely going
to
be Vulture.
We never got to see a Scorpion. We still haven't.
No, we've seen the character. It's played by the character that's played by the actor in Better Call Saul, he's Scorpion. That's Matt Garrigan, I hope you say his name.
Yeah, we've never seen the
in
Scorpion.
The suit.
Yeah.
I'd be down for that. Scorpion's a vicious character. He's a vicious little fucker. Like,
pretty cool.
Yeah, no, I'd be down for that. You know what I'll be also down for, dude? Alistair Smythe and the Spider Slayers, because J. Jonah Jameson funded them. Do you know them at all?
No, it's a pretty deep dive.
It's a pretty deep dive, but dude, I think that's the direction they'll go in as we get into all these spin-offs. So Spider-Man's got a lot of cool characters. The Spider-Slayers, from memory, they're sort of like, maybe they're cyborgs or robots or something, or maybe it's a suit, but they're created by Alistair Smythe, and J. Jonah Jameson actually funds them because he hates Spider-Man that much. And they're like full-on evil, like, you know, J. Jonah Jameson doesn't intend them to be quite as evil as actually they become. But it's pretty interesting. Was there any J. Jonah Jameson mentioned in Spider-Man Homecoming, Stu? Did he get a mention at any point? Like, the Bugle get a mention? I'm just trying to remember.
I feel like there was a mention.
But we didn't see him.
We certainly didn't see him. We didn't see inside the Bugle at all.
In the original Spider-Man, that guy just lit it up as J. Jonah. I still think of him as J. Jonah Jameson. That actor who's now Detective
Through,
Gordon.
Sam Raimi's version.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. He was great.
Oh, yeah.
Great. Like, to me, that's a genuinely great supporting character. That's as good as some of the Alfreds have been. He was so on point. and he's now playing Detective Gordon, isn't he? Commissioner Gordon.
Yeah, yeah, he is.
What's his name? Do you know?
I
can't think of it.
Oh, off the top of my head, I can't remember.
Yeah, I can't think of it. I'm nowhere near it as well. I'm just so far away from knowing his name. It's not
funny. I will remember it. It's going to drive me crazy.
I won't remember it. we could be recording for another 10 hours and I won't remember it. Stu, obviously, I guess, do you know what time it is?
Time for me to look up who's playing Commissioner Gordon in Justice League.
You can do that. And it's also time for Weekly Comics.
You just taunt me with it now.
I know. So, Stu, you won't believe this. Lois is on her game. She's on her game and she's working hard. Working hard for the money. Now, Stu,
have you read this whole article? Is this what you're saying?
I've read a whole article. It's come across my desk. Now, Stu, you know how much I love Neil Gaiman and Sandman. Yep.
Everybody loves Neil Gaiman. American Gods is going massive right now.
If you've ever read, by the way, a show that I've got to catch up on. Now, the thing is, I'll detail the news. Basically, yesterday, Bleeding Cool ran news that a new DC character was being introduced by two creators, Jay Nitz and Scott Eaton, into the upcoming Suicide Squad, The Black Files. Some sort of Suicide Squad spin-off, and it was called Dr. Endless, a gender-fluid character. Their appearance and powers were based on the Endless from Neil Gaiman's Sandman.
Yeah, very well-known.
My first thought when I read this was like... Well, I actually remember thinking, I read this article and thought, doesn't Neil Gaiman have basically a deal where when he finished Sandman, his deal was they couldn't continue with those characters? Mm. They couldn't just do Sandman Volume 2.
I think he had exclusive rights on creative property, didn't he?
Exactly. He literally had a deal where they couldn't do another Sandman comic. Without him at the helm or his approval. And since they finished Sandman, he came back in about 2013 and did Sandman Overture, which I still haven't read. I own it, which is a prequel into Sandman, which details why Dream is so depowered at the start of the Sandman comic.
Yeah, right.
And I've always wanted to read it. But anyway, hilariously, though, it goes, this is the news item from Bleeding Cool. Except, it seems, no one had thought to tell Neil Gaiman, who has, as part of his deal with DC Comics over the series, has retained the right of refusal to how DC exploits Sandman and the characters created for the Sandman series, which includes all the Endless aside from Destiny. So Destiny, who is one of the Endless, must have already existed previously. He's the one with the chain, the book, you know,
It
has the book of everything. And, you know, blah, blah, blah. And Neil Gaiman got wind of it after Bleeding Cool ran the article. Expect the character to still appear, but to no longer be called Dr. Endless and all reference in text to be amended. That's pretty major, isn't it? I actually checked...
Pretty major stuff up from DC, not to...
Just, like, I mean, I know about this deal, Stu, and I'm nothing but a fan, like the end of a very long chain. Like, this is a well-known deal that Neil Gaiman had with Karen Berger and Vertigo that was a legal deal. Because, let's face it, Neil Gaiman is one of the characters, one of the guys who built Vertigo into what it was.
Mm.
He's one of the premier lights all through the 90s. A huge player. He ran it from the late 80s into the 90s. Let's say Sandman finished in roughly about 96 or so.
Uh-huh.
You know, and he was one of the guys who built it, along with Grant Morrison, Peter Milligan, those kind of guys. There's a reason that he had such a good deal, because otherwise, you know, you can't tell me that they wouldn't have had Sandman Volume 2 out already. You know,
yeah,
and a
exactly.
million different versions of Sandman. I'm so glad that his Sandman exists as it does. I went to Neil Gaiman's Twitter to just see if there was any activity on his Twitter, because Neil Gaiman has a pretty active Twitter presence, and he does actually mention it. As always with Neil Gaiman, he's fairly sort of diplomatic. And I just see this thing where someone tweeted him and gone, "Hi, I hope you're well. Is this Dr. Endless character related to Endless besides the name? Thanks for everything." And Neil Gaiman replied, "I check with DC and they tell me this is not a thing." Very diplomatic, isn't he?
Right.
Because I shut it down.
So, yeah, DC's good. Hurriedly shut everything down and changed
That's
names.
That's sad. You know who I feel like? The creators who put this out there in Suicide Squad fucking Black Files, whatever it is, like, you know, the who fucking cares files. Like,
yeah.
But, like... It's not them, because they've gone, oh, you know, this is a cool character, gender-fluid character, the character, you know, blah, blah, blah. And then the people at DC were like, yeah, that's a great idea. Like, how are they not thinking, oh, yeah, there's, like, this long-standing arrangement which is well-known to the general public. Like, you sometimes wonder, like, I know they're all overworked, but I don't give a fuck. Like, you still fuck up, you know?
Yeah, I kind of feel like someone's had the idea to have a gender-fluid character.
Yeah.
Which, great idea, why not?
No problem with that.
And then someone else in that bullpen has just gone, yeah, I kind of remember one of these characters. Let me find a character that we own.
Well, like...
haven't bothered to look anything up.
Yeah, because if I remember in Sandman, and I must admit, it's been a little while since I've read it, although I love it, and bits of, like, Desire is gender fluid. She can be... She's male and female. And sometimes you're very androgynous looking, you know, like, let's just take this opportunity to remember Sandman. What an incredible run.
Like, it really was. We're going to have to do it as a trade of the week.
We'll do a trade of the week. And what I think we'll do is, Stu, I've got all the trades and we should just do it in trade format, like break it up, like have a break of two weeks.
How many trades are there in total?
Oh, there's about 10. Like 75 issues.
Yeah, it's a long run.
75 issues and then there's Overture. I'd like to do Overture at the end of it. Because it starts out pretty raw, but then he finds his footing by the end of the first arc. I remember I read The Invisibles by Grant Morrison.
Yep.
And it blew me away. Like, it actually...
That was a good read. I remember that
was a really good read. I got to the end of The Invisibles, and I was like, it spoke to me, because I love Grant Morrison, it spoke to me all about creation and making my own work, and it really, really connected. Mm. And then I finished it, and I felt like I need more of this epicness. And I went straight to Sandman, which is a really big jump, because by the end of The Invisibles, like, Grant Morrison has really gotten refined it, whereas the start of Sandman's quite raw, and the art's quite odd. And I was like, is this really as good as everyone says?
Yeah.
He'd come back to me at, like, the first issue, which introduces Death, which is about issue 6 or something.
Yeah,
and
read through to issue 10, yeah, by that stage you are well.
It just clicked. It hooked me.
Yeah,
Stu, I got to a point in Sandman to do with what's the character's name? It's not Despair. It's the one who's a bit crazy. The one he based on, like, Tori Amos and stuff. You know the one? She used to be called Delight, and now she's Delirium.
Delirium.
Her stuff got me actually to a point where I was like, what's real and what's not. I actually got to that point. Like, I was like, man, this guy's like pushing the barriers of what's reality to me. I was so...
I mean, this is why he is such a big name.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
He is a phenomenal
talent. He built his reputation on Sandman. He wrote American Gods after this. But yeah. Sandman's where he built the building blocks of his reputation.
Yeah.
And it's so well-deserved. And I remember being in the 90s, Stu.
And I've got to say that some of that is that they haven't gone back and tried to ruin his legacy.
Exactly. Yeah. No one's gone.
Because there are a lot of properties where the first movie in a series or the first book in a series is brilliant work.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden the overarching company that owns the rights...
The corporate overlords get involved and let's milk it for everything it's worth.
Change the directors or do something weird and it just goes to shit.
Yep. I mean, look, Watchmen... is great. Before Watchmen was unnecessary at best.
Mm.
Like, I'm not saying it wasn't like the Antichrist that some people were painting it as, but it was unnecessary.
Yeah.
Now, I honestly don't think there's any writer in the world that could do Sandman as well as Neil Gaiman. I doubt Neil Gaiman could even come back. only because he's changed so much and evolved. Like, do you know what I mean? It's like coming back to that property. I want to read Sandman Overture just to but I'm sort of trepidatious because I love that 75 issue run so much.
Yeah.
It's an incredible read. And look, this isn't biggest news. I'm glad that Neil Gaiman got wind of it. I'm glad that's been next because what we don't need is DC trying to milk off Sandman. If you want to get Sandman, guess what? Pay Neil Gaiman big, big, big dollars to come back and write another series for you.
If you're more Sandman, get Neil Gaiman to do it himself.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah, get Neil Gaiman. Yeah. Like, don't...
There are so few writers and creators that are capable of tuning into someone else's creative flow.
Exactly.
It's why when a creator dies midway through a series, it's rare that the final section is as good as the rest of it.
Definitely.
It's very rare.
It's very hard. Like, it doesn't even
there
have to be...
There are so few writers that can pull that off.
Dude, look at me. I'm not saying I'm a genius, but if I keeled over and died tomorrow, someone just picking up the Demona Santi series, there's no way they could key into every thought. They could read the three books and come up with some good plot lines that are based on the
stories.
Yeah,
and even if you gave them notes on where you wanted the characters to go...
Totally,
it would be
a
completely different feel.
Yeah, but they don't know what's in my head to go forward, ideas I've had, like, today... Do you know what I mean?
Exactly.
Like, notes I've just made. Like, and I'm not saying I'm some genius, but I'm just saying that's the same with every creator. Neil Gaiman must have put, I would love to have a conversation or read a really long interview where Neil Gaiman goes into huge detail on Sandman, because I've never really read it. I imagine in the 90s that probably existed. I reckon in the 90s when Neil Gaiman was still writing it, he must have got some heavy... Can you imagine, like, the amount of, like, sort of heavy, deep interviewing that he would have got during that period? Because he's changed a lot since then. He's more of a novelist now, and, you know, he's got an active presence, but he's not the kind of guy who sits down and does really long exposés on stuff he did 20 years ago. You know, he's more about...
I don't think anyone does if their career is still going.
Still going strong. But it would be interesting to if we went back and looked through the notes, he'd probably done some long-form interviews about Sandman back in the 90s, you know?
I'm sure he probably did, yeah.
Dude, I remember this. Back in the... It was in the 90s. It was probably around 96. And a common theme in my 90s stories, I was pretty stoned at a party. And we're out in a... We're in Tassie, okay? And it's like, very lightly, like, I was just a little bit dreamy, and there was this chick next to me. And she was pretty stoned. And we were talking about dreams and, like, in dreams, like, you know, being in a house. And like, sometimes, you know, very vivid dreams where it appears like it's real. You know what I mean? Like, you know, at times you wake up from a dream and you can't believe almost that that wasn't real, or, you have gone so into such a vivid, deep dream that it feels more real than the reality you wake up in. And we're talking about that kind of thing. And she pitched to me Neil Gaiman Sandman. I'd never heard of it because I wasn't super connected to the comics world. And I remember the conversation was one of those, like, ships passing in the night sort of thing. And it twigged a light in my brain. I thought, that sounds really interesting. Like, and this would have been coming towards the end of his run. So it was, you know, it was already an acclaimed thing. I just had never heard of it. And I remember that in my mind. And then, like, years later, I went and I then knew about Neil Gaiman after American Gods. And when I started reading Sandman, my first thought was, like, is this it? Like, because the art was so primitive in those early issues of Sandman.
Yeah.
And
like you said, those first five or six.
Yeah, yeah. He was still finding his rhythm yet. Yeah,
it,
yeah.
It wasn't.
But it's a great example of, like, give a guy five or six issues and then he doesn't just, like, it's not like he gets a bit better. It's like... He goes
no, but I mean, he always had plans to get this series going.
Yeah, yeah.
So
yeah.
It was always going to be a slow starting.
Exactly. It's fascinating.
Build up.
Now, when I think of it, the character of Dream, how he was so in that circle and the prisoner of that, you know, crazy guy who of the Aleister Crowley or whatever his name was. I would like to read Overture to see the story of how he got to be so depowered. Because apparently in Overture, there's all the different personifications of Dream through all the centuries and stuff. Like, so around the galaxy, like, different versions of Dream. Because you know how the Dream was in the show was based on Neil Gaiman, sort of like 80s Neil Gaiman.
Yeah.
It's pretty cool, man. Anyway, I mean, that's the news item, and I guess, and also a Sandman review wrapped up in one. now, Stu, we're already on Weekly Comics. I gave you the shorter version there. See, that was the lower volume version.
Keep going.
The first comic this week, Stu, was Dark Days, the Casting, the DC event that's tying into Metal, all about Batman and Green Lantern and Hawkman and the Metal. What did you think?
I didn't mind this one. I
didn't mind it.
It was pretty enjoyable.
We loved The Forge. I didn't think this was quite as good as The Forge, but I thought it was very, very solid. No,
the Joker story arc was really good.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed that.
And how about Batman going into sort of like the Wheel of the Gods and all that kind of stuff, and Wonder Woman being there, and he was facing off against that magical beast, and she's like, you shouldn't be here.
Yeah.
Dude, it's fucking pretty full on.
It's getting really good.
And, dude, metal tying into meta.
Yeah.
And, like, that's pretty... I've got to be honest, that's actually some pretty cool shit.
Yeah.
Like, no, that's a bit more like...
I'm enjoying it. I really am.
This is reminding me of sort of more the classic 90s DC, where it was like they weren't afraid to go some big concepts.
To be honest, my problem is that it's a monthly.
Is it?
I've now got to wait 4 weeks for the next.
Is there another one before the Dark? Because I think what it apparently is, like, it's kind of like the dark universe is all dark versions of everybody.
Yeah.
I hope it's as interesting as what the beginning is. You know?
Because, I mean, I'm going to read the next one. They've got me, they've got me hooked so far.
I mean, I'm liking the... How about the art? Your boy John Romita Jr.
was fantastic.
John Romita Jr. is pretty good, isn't he?
Oh, he's so good. Especially the way he was drawing the Joker.
Yeah, and how about Batman? Like, his Batman's good in that armored suit. Uh-huh. There was another artist as well on it. It wasn't just John Romita Jr. They had two artists working as well. I thought it was... I think this event, for me... I went from being quite dubious about this event to being like, this is actually pretty badass.
Yeah, this is a cool event.
I will go on record. I reckon I might pick this one up in hardcover when it all comes out. This is the first event since Multiplicity from DC that's got me like, fuck yes. You know?
Nice. That's really good.
Yeah, they need it, man. Because without Grant Morrison, they've lacked that extra spark. Grant Morrison always gave DC that, like, I'm a little bit crazy, I'm ready to take risks. I think Snyder, who for me has underperformed at times, is really rising to the occasion on this one.
Yeah, although we've kind of had problems with him in the past.
Oh, definitely.
With a really great, solid start, and then it peters out.
And that's what I'm worried about. But there's more than Snyder involved here. If you look at the cast list...
Yeah, I know, and that's giving me a lot of hope.
James Tynion in the fourth, he's pretty strong. He's on Detective Comics, he's involved here.
Yeah.
Johnny Romita Jr. on art, though, I feel pretty solid with him.
Oh, like...
Take him to the bank, you know?
Right now, he's one of the best artists going around.
And he's been that way for a long time, man.
Yeah.
Think about it, he's been rolling since the 80s.
Yeah.
Dude... I can't think of too many artists who've been rolling that long and they're still so big.
Exactly, and they're still doing such great work.
Yeah, and it's so cool that, like, he went from Marvel where he was an institution on Spider-Man and stuff.
Oh, yeah.
And Punisher and everything, and now he's going over to DC. He's kind of like, actually, I'm feeling the DC now. It's good.
Mm.
Yeah, no, he's
I reckon... bringing some of his style to DC, and I've... like, that style of art is what hooked me on Marvel.
Yeah, no. He's just got... I'd call it cool. Like, it's just cool. When you want really stuff, you sort of like, yes, he has some stuff that always looks the same, but it's actually, I like it.
Oh, I really like
it. Yeah, I dig it, man. He's good. But this story is crazy. Like, the way, I love stuff where, I was just talking about the Invisibles with Grant Morrison. I love stuff that gets into the heart of the universe. Like, you get into the secrets and the sort of building blocks of what makes the DC Universe the DC Universe. And this is, I think, getting there. When they said that, because...
Yeah.
Duke.
Going back and looking at Hawkman.
Yeah.
Researching the Nth Metal this whole time.
Yeah, exactly.
And now it all coming full circle. And
it's before. It's before Ancient Egypt. It goes back further.
Yeah, it's so good.
And they're tying in all the immortals like Vandal Savage, Ra's al Ghul. Man, it's fucking intense. Yeah,
Ra's al Ghul is one of my favorite characters.
Oh, he's great. Like, whenever he turns up, I'm like, yeah.
Oh, I love that character.
I was a bit like, though, Ra's al Ghul isn't technically immortal. He gets his immortality from the Lazarus Pit, I always thought. He himself is just a human who's just long lived, isn't he? But maybe he's perverted his body by using them so much.
Well, yeah, that's also true. He has changed his physiology.
Wouldn't surprise me if.
Through use in the pits. But I think it's more a case of it's like a cult that was formed at a certain time, and he was around then.
Yeah, yeah.
And they've all lived through centuries together.
Yeah, and they've dug under.
And they've just called themselves the Immortals now that they've, you know.
Yeah. And it wouldn't stun me to find that the metals play some part with Lazarus Pits, if that detail got emerged. Because it seems the metal is what's tying everything together.
Yeah.
And the metal comes from... I didn't really understand the end. The metal comes from these dark beings who said they've prepared... Train Batman to be able to perform the sacrifice with the machine. Like, it's like they've somehow trained Batman, because they were saying, like, a normal person would already have died by now, but we've prepared him so well. So Batman's kind of opening the world for them.
Yeah, it's kind of like they have been influencing the events of history for so long now that they found their, like, chosen one.
Yeah, which is Batman.
Which is Batman. And they've been slowly, like, forcing him to come up against villains and...
Yeah.
Training him over time without actually getting in and, like, dealing with him directly.
Now, do you think this will tie into Batman when he was returning through time and he was going through all the different versions? Because surely I'd think that there is that aspect as well.
Yeah, I think so, because we have seen the bat symbol show up in the hieroglyphics.
Because that's how he got back to the present. Like, he was leaving
clues for himself.
Drake messages in the caves and stuff. Which is fucking badass.
Yeah, so yeah, I do think that's going to tie in.
Dude, I thought it was very solid. I'm giving it an 8.5.
I've got it down as an 8, yeah.
Cool. Now, I'm interested to see what you think of this next one, The American Way, number one. I found it a somewhat confronting comic, but it was solid. It was busy. The storyline is pretty much...
I really enjoyed this.
Yeah.
It's a confronting story, but I really enjoyed this.
I mean, there's racial language, there's all sorts of stuff going on, but it's all about, like, racial politics and mixed in with a superhero theme, but it's a very urban story. It actually got me. I've got to be honest, I'm going to keep reading.
Yeah, same. I wasn't expecting a lot when I saw the cover.
No.
And when I, you know, read the brief synopsis online, I was like, okay.
Yeah, I just picked it at random. I thought, DC give us these, review copies. I thought, well, let's just pick one that's just randomly. What I found out about it, I'm listening to or looking at some stuff that DC Hopkins over at Hideous Energy posted. This is a sequel series to a series that's been out previously. You know all the stuff they referred to in the comic about how all the fights were rigged?
Yeah, yeah.
That's actually in a previous series.
Right, so,
But they tied it so well that you could come in not knowing that.
Oh, look, I mean, you and I came in blind we both enjoyed it.
Yeah. No,
If you hadn't told me about it, that wouldn't have worried me.
Oh, doesn't worry me at all. I happened to read it today and was quite surprised, actually.
Yeah.
I'm giving this a solid 7.5 out of 10 and I'm going to keep reading.
I've got this as an 8.5.
Fair enough, man.
I really enjoy this one.
Now, Stu, I'm so excited to see what you think of Edge of Venomverse issue 2.
I love this issue. Yeah, it was good. I really love this issue.
Gwenpool mixed with Venom. Fun. Yeah. How crazy is Venom mixed with Gwenpool? How the look with the big teeth.
With like the massive. Yeah, then the artwork just worked. It was so cartoony.
I told you that I'd like the last one, which featured X-23. I thought this was a really great take. It was the Gwenpool. Mixed with Venom,
yeah,
and she's so nutty.
Yeah, it's all the fourth wall breaking that you want. It's
yeah.
This really got the humor.
This Edge of Venomverse stuff, dude, is pretty good. And I realize they're mirroring Spider-Verse exactly because Spider-Verse started with Edge of Spider-Verse. Because when I was reading this, I was thinking this was Venomverse, but it's actually the Edge of, so it's like the prelude.
Yeah.
Dude, so far Venomverse has been pretty good.
I'm really enjoying
and
this.
And did either of us think it was going to be worth it? I didn't. I think we've made fun of it before.
Oh, yeah, we did, absolutely.
Yeah.
Like, this is... It sounds like such a stupid idea.
Yeah, but they're actually treating it seriously.
No, like, the opposite. I think they're treating it as a giant joke, and it's working.
Yeah, what I mean is the quality is high. The quality
of the quality is high, but they're not taking themselves seriously.
No.
They're, like, if they tried to make this property work at an intellectual level, it wouldn't. It can't.
I think what they've done so far is really used... Like X-23, taken her character type, put Venom into it, and spun it one way. With Gwenpool, who's a crazy character, from what little I know. She's a nutty character.
And yeah, then, it's like Deadpool, but just...
It's even a bit more bizarre. Like, she knows that she's fictional. Think, no, she comes from... According
she
to
knows
this,
she's in a fictional world.
Yeah, which is just nuts, like straight
she,
away.
Yeah, it would, was it interdimensional travel, and yes, she wound up in the comic like book that. Universe?
Yeah.
But now she's kind of having feelings for
she started
characters.
Out, you know, she started out as a like a cosplay. That was how it started, apparently.
Right.
Like she was I think it was Jason Latour, someone like that, who was an artist on Wolverine's X-Men and stuff with Jason Aaron. He may have done like a variant cover or something, and it just snowballed into this huge cosplay sensation of Gwenpool, and then they ran with it for a series. And, like, it's just so, like, it was one of those kind of...
It's lighthearted, fun.
Yeah, definitely.
Quick pace. There's great action scenes.
Yeah, no, it's a lot of fun. The look of her character when she's merged with him with the big teeth just got me every time. And how funny when she's in the meeting with Daredevil as the lawyer and she's just writing notes about, like...
She's just doodling, like...
Cartoons of a loving Daredevil. And, like, him. Then her boss gets a note.
Yeah.
It really, honestly, I'm going to give this one. I'm actually going to give this a 9.
I've also got down as a 9.
Yeah, I think it was a really good show.
It's been a really solid week.
Yeah. Now, Stuart finishes, though, with Spider-Men 2, issue 1 by Brian Michael Bendis and Sarah Pacelli. Look, honestly, this is Miles Morales and Peter Parker, but the original Spider-Man was their first ever meeting when Peter Parker came over, I believe, to the Ultimate Universe.
Yep.
After he died in the Ultimate Universe.
Well, yeah, he died to make Miles Morales Spider-Man.
Yeah, but and then Peter Parker, the actual Peter Parker, came over to the Ultimate Universe.
Yep.
Which had a stack of magic attached as a pretty good series, a pretty good mini. This felt like another day in the office.
Well, I've got to admit, I read about half of it.
Mm.
It wasn't grabbing me.
Dude, I read the full thing, and I honestly felt this could have been issue 331.
Like, there's nothing bad about it, but there's nothing good about it.
It had no spark.
It felt like a very paint-by-numbers kind of comic.
Yes, it was felt like Brian Michael Bendis going, oh, okay, I'll crank this out. Like, yeah, where's my typewriter? Okay, how many pages do you need? Sweet. Okay, got it. Insert scene with Genki. Insert this, insert that, the end. It just felt like such a passionless comic.
Yeah, they didn't get the humour.
Nothing wrong.
The tone wasn't quite right.
But ironically, this is the guy who creates and writes Miles Morales.
One of the best creators of Spider-Man.
And it's his character. Miles Morales is his character. And he knows Peter Parker back to front.
He does.
But it just actually felt... It wasn't characterization, it was plot. The plot was moving at the pace of a snail, and it finished with a shocking revelation about the real Miles Morales. And how about the bit where he goes, "Oh, what? Do you remember the dimensional portal?" And then we had Miles Morales tell us how he remembered that he came from the pre-Secret Wars. Like, he actually explained in one... I was like, really, seriously, did fucking editorial just write this for you, and did you just insert it? Like, yeah. It felt like it was written out of a handbook. Like, I know it was supposed to be funny, but it was delivered like a leaden weight. He goes, "Yeah, I remember I come from another dimension, and then we went through Secret Wars, and then we came out in this other dimension where we all emerged, and blah, 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 blah." And I was like, dude, that wasn't... If you'd done that with some levity, this could have been good, but this came across like the biggest info dump in the world.
Which is disappointing, because you got everything going for it.
Yeah.
Like, when I read this on paper...
Yeah, I thought, cool.
I was all for it.
Well, I like Miles Morales, and I like... I'm not particularly knowledgeable, but I like Miles Morales, and I like Peter Parker.
Yeah,
and
we like two Spider-Men together. I was like, okay, the comedy's going to be there.
And at least they weren't fighting, because that is one thing. I like they've got a good relationship. That's the only good thing about this, actually. When they turned up, Peter made a joke, and I was like, oh, well, good, at least it's a light-hearted relationship, at least. Because... Mm. Nothing about Peter Parker and Miles Morales should they be enemies. They should be friends.
No, well, Miles grew up
idolizing him.
But
in the regular universe where Peter's, you know, in this, don't remember, he's like Tony Stark fucking junior now. Like, he's like running his own Parker Industries and stuff, which is just fucking annoying.
Yeah.
I mean, give me fucking Peter as a college teacher or something. I don't want him being like Parker Industries Peter, which thankfully doesn't get a mention in this. Yeah, I got to be honest.
I like the artwork.
There's nothing wrong with the artwork. To be honest, if this was a regular issue in a regular comic, I'd be like, okay, passable. But this is meant to be an event. Dude, this was the most boring first issue of any event I've ever read that I can remember. I'm giving this 5 out of 10, which I think is all it deserves. Average in the truest sense of the word.
Yeah, it's exactly what I had, Dennis. It's pass. But
it's barely. A pass, but fucking, you're not... In my notes, I say, not trying, Bendis.
Yeah, try harder.
Try harder, Bendis. Well, dude, we've got this to look forward to from Bendis. Generations, which is going to have the two of them together. And then Legacy, which is going to have the two of them together. So he's got three swings at bat here. The first one
has... First one was a bit of a miss.
Oh, do you know what I found incredibly... Actually, this is something I found infuriating. At the end of the comic, they had the thing about, like, why it's taken so long for them this story to happen, Sarah Pacelli to come back. Was this story has, like, held it all up. I'm like, this story, which nothing happened in? But then we had something about... This really infuriated me. There's a promo for, I think, a Miles Morales, like, YA book. And it goes, this explores Miles Morales in a way that no comic ever possibly could. And I thought, I winced, and I actually thought of, like, stuff like Sandman and fucking Invisibles and... And I thought, if you had that actual attitude as an editor of comic books, you have failed. A good comic book, a really well-crafted book, definitely could do that. Okay? It's a fucking YA novel about Miles Morales. If you wanted to...
They're not reaching for the stars.
Yeah, I actually almost, dude... got on the email and felt like writing an email going, are you serious? That think of all the... You've just disparaged the entire medium. In one thing you have, so stupidly, and then gone, oh, but all these fucking answers are in this book that you please buy. And I just thought, it's not worth it. Because this is the... I was so infuriated, Stu, that I almost hulked out. I read it about 5 minutes before you turned up to record. And I just thought, this is the lack of ambition at Marvel that's so telling with this one comment. Like, if I was Brian Michael Bendis, I wouldn't have let them print that. I'd be like, I write comic books. I don't write YA novels. Like, I agree, it could be a great novel. But there's nothing to tell me that if you wanted to write a really good, like, 10-issue series on Miles Morales, that you couldn't explore the same depths. It told fucking well.
And I cite Sandman. I cite Invisibles. I cite so many good comic books that have explored the inner depths of the human experience.
Yeah. Fuck off, basically, was my message to the editor there. And you know what? I feel like downgrading it to a 4 just for that comment, but I won't. I respect the work that's on the page, and it gets a 5. Do you like my anger, Stu?
I do, yeah.
There's always a rant around the corner with me, isn't there?
There's always a rant just around the corner.
Yeah, I'm so glad I remembered it because I forgot to put in my notes. But then just as we were wrapping up, I suddenly remembered it right at the end. That's a pity.
Stu. I might have edited the notes.
A nail in the road. And that's our segue into Trade of the Week.
It's our segue.
Which our Trade of the Week, Stu, is, and you're chuckling over there because it was such a good joke, I know, JLA the nail, Stu.
Yeah.
The nail in the coffin. Man, okay, I'll give the... I gave the pitch last week, but I just want to give it again because I love the pitch. The pitch is so simple. Imagine this, dear listeners. It's like the late 90s. Elseworlds are all the thing. Alan Davis rolls up to bat. Incredible artist. Competent writer. And he comes up with this story. Imagine this. If on the day that Superman crash-landed in Smallville in the spacecraft, instead of John and Martha going to pick him up, a nail punctures their tire of their pickup, their ute, so they never leave. They never leave the house that day because they had a flat tire.
Yeah.
And Superman's crash lands.
Uh-huh.
What if? What happened? Dude,
it's such a brilliant little one-off idea.
Yeah.
That spins off into this, and I really enjoyed this.
Do you feel like this was an idea that came up after a few bongs? Like, someone's gone, fuck, I've got it? Because I do.
It feels to me like they've just gone, all right, we're running out of ideas.
Yeah, we're
what if
we're struggling.
Superman wasn't Superman. All right, let's go with that.
Let's go with that. That's a good idea. Yeah. And then someone's gone, I've got it. A nail hit their pickup truck.
Yeah.
And they're just, someone's gone, that's actually fucking good.
And then they spun it into that old medieval.
Yeah.
Quote.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, that quote.
How they kind of meant to bring it about.
Yeah, yeah. The quote, what if the horse was lost or something?
For lack of a nail, the horse didn't have shoes. For lack of horseshoes, the messenger didn't get through. For lack of the message, the general didn't get his orders.
You've got it completely wrong. That's not the message. For want of a horse, the battle was lost. For want of the battle, the kingdom was lost.
No, I thought it was a messenger on the horse. And because the general didn't get the message, he lost the war.
I read it as big... Well, that's good reading, actually. But I read it because of the horse. The knight couldn't get in the battle. And they lost the battle because the knight wasn't there.
They lost a battle because of one guy?
Yeah. And that guy's name is Kal-El, Superman. Read between the lines, Stu.
Not the general organizing his troops. Really?
No, it was like imagine this. In Lord of the Rings, if fucking Gandalf wasn't there or something like that. Like, yes, he's one soldier man in a big war, but he's very powerful. That's how I read it. Anyway, regardless of whatever the ancient saying is, which I noticed they had adapted to modern use. Well, I'm like, oh, so it wasn't actually the saying. Like, yeah. You guys have just adapted it, like, in your fucking, like, joint-filled session when you came up with the story. But anyway, turning to the story itself. So anyway, cut to what I liked about it was that you hit the ground running. And the Justice League is a Justice League. Like, you recognize everyone. Like, Martian Manhunter's there, Batman's there, Wonder Woman's there. Everyone's pretty recognizable.
Oh, yeah. It seems to be pretty much the same lineup.
Same lineup. The world.
There's no Superman and there's no offshoots. There's no Supergirl.
There's no Super Family. Lex Luthor is mayor of Metropolis and he's pretty much riding high. Jimmy Olsen is, his second in charge.
Yeah.
And Jimmy Olsen, cleverly, they're very clever about using stuff. Like, Jimmy Olsen in the original comics back in the 50s and 60s, Superman's pal, always changed into various, like, crazy beings and stuff. And he was always Superman's buddy, you know, pressing his signal watch. Well, in this, he changed into all those things anyway. And they tie that into the story.
Yeah, so obviously it is an alternate dimension.
Sure.
But they kind of run with a lot of the ideas that you're familiar with and exactly. All the characters you're familiar with.
I want to say one thing. Ra's al Ghul turns up in one of the most badass capes I've ever seen. Like, they give like little gestures to make characters like a little bit different. He's wearing like blue instead of green. I thought he looked fucking baller, man. I was like, Ra's al Ghul in this universe is pretty much an icon of fucking style.
It's so good.
Yeah.
It's a great little read.
And there's a bit of the start which, like, I'll be honest, the writing's competent. I wouldn't describe the writing. It's not very dynamic or fluid. It's very...
Oh, look, they're not winning any awards for this. No. But it's a solid, fun little solid, read.
Fun read. But did you like the little debate session at the start of the Justice League where everyone's, like, talking about Injustice and, like, the media hates them? Because everything's a bit darker, isn't it, with them? Like, because they don't have the light of Superman to sort of shine the light into all their hearts.
Well, it's kind of... I'm not going to spoil anything sure. for the readers, but... You do kind of get the sense that everything's been plotted out for them and they're kind of... They've been walking slowly into this trap over time.
Yeah. Who is... Because there's like a big bad behind it all.
There is.
Hmm. I got a bit confused by... Who is the big bad?
Is it's a bit of a spoiler, so...
Oh, fuck it. It came out in the 90s, Stu. Like, what? A fucking book that came out in like 1999 can't be spoiled. Are you kidding?
Well, yeah, but if we were reviewing it for the first time, maybe. All right, so spoiler alert.
Is it Jimmy Olsen?
It's Jimmy Olsen.
Okay. It's Jimmy Olsen, but is it just Jimmy Olsen?
Yeah.
Is it?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, who was... Because Stario was there, but he was blended with Crypto, which was eerie as fuck.
Yeah.
Stario the Conqueror, the remember we did Stario in our first episode, Stu?
Yeah, he was the first villain of the Justice League. Yeah,
but in this he's merged with a dog, who's Crypto.
Yeah.
Poor Crypto.
That was Jimmy's doing.
Jimmy's a little prick.
And Jimmy was controlling Luthor the whole time.
Oh, was Jimmy controlling everyone's minds?
Yeah.
Oh, see, I thought someone was controlling Jimmy. I thought there was another puppet behind the puppeteer.
No, Jimmy... Because Jimmy spliced his own DNA with that of Krypton.
Right. What did you think of... I mean, honestly, some of the Batman stuff in this is cool. Like, fucking bad shit happens to the Bat family. I'd forgotten that. I've got to say Selina looked pretty good. In the purple. Oh, in the purple, man. In a classic costume, very buxom. I mean, I'm just calling it like I saw it, man. Silver Age style Batman with the blue. I love that blue. That blue, you know, that 70s icon. I find that Batman is my favorite Batman. Dude, if I was writing Batman, I'd want him to be dressed like that. He's so badass. Alan Davis does a fantastic job on art. He's an acclaimed artist, dude. Everyone I've spoken to in the lead up to this show has mentioned, like Drew Geraci was saying, Alan Davis is just perfection.
Yeah.
The art's great.
Oh, absolutely.
The art's actually, it's one of those books where the story is good. Like it's a 7 out of 10, 7 out of 0.5 out of 10. Like, but the art, it's a notch above, isn't it?
I mean, to be honest, reading art that was done by Alex Ross a few weeks ago.
Sure.
Has kind of ruined me for every other artist.
Oh, dear. That's dark.
I mean, Alex Ross's art just blew everyone else out of the water.
Who did we do? What did we do on Alex
Justice.
Ross?
We did Justice.
That's right. I've already forgotten. I've obviously gotten over it. You've got to read Kingdom Come. You've got to read Kingdom Come because it's better than Justice. It's a lot better.
Look, the artwork doesn't get much better.
No, but like he does the art for Kingdom Come.
Yeah, exactly. But it's his style.
He's good. Seen, but this is good
Marvel's
too,
Marvel's also
but
his
But, dude, this
style.
Is this style, different way, is very good as well. Alan Davis is.
It is, yeah. It's great. But I just... Whenever I'm reading JLA now, it's always going to be compared to that.
Wow.
And you're going to struggle to compete.
You're one of those guys, aren't you?
Yeah.
Just you're very sitting ways. See, I'm very fluid. I forget instantly.
Once I've had the best, why would you go...
Why would you taste the rest?
Yeah.
That kind of thing. For me, you know why? Because I forget very easily. I'd already forgotten we did it. I move on with my life. I'm ready for the next thing. That's how you should approach it. You know, it's easier that way, Stu. Because, like, Alex Ross in Kingdom Come's fucking baller, man. But, like, everyone's got their own interpretation. I'd put Alan Davis up there amongst the best artists I've seen do Justice League. Like, I like that cartoony style he's got. Whereas often now you get like the darker approach, everything's very dark, which I don't mind, the more, you know, realistic, and I use that with quotes. But he goes for a brighter palette, doesn't he?
He does. It's very indicative of the art you used to see in like the 60s.
I dug it. It's Silver Age.
Yeah, the Silver Age.
What did you think of... I've got one criticism though. When the... I will do spoilers over what happened to Batman's friends. Believe you me, it's pretty fucking intense. I've actually forgotten that. I've read this years ago.
Oh, yeah. Batman's story arc in this
fuck.
Is full on.
Yeah, but did you like the art where Batman was, like, crying and stuff? Because it looked a little unhinged. Because I thought the art there was not as good as the art normally. I thought it was a little... It just... I don't know. It just... It took me out of it a bit.
No, I'm the opposite. I really loved that part.
It was very... Maybe it was...
Because it showed that this was big enough to break Batman.
Yeah, maybe that's where I got... I sort of struggled because... But it was good. Like, Batman's arc in this is pretty badass. And also, she's so neglected. But Wonder Woman, again, has a good arc. But she's never given the center of the thing. Because I was like, why isn't Wonder Woman just taking charge?
Yeah, I did think like that. Like, they actually do mention it in a panel.
Hmm.
About, what, a third of the way through?
Yeah.
But in the beginning, when it was there's no Superman, I was like, well, obviously Wonder Woman's going to be stepping up.
But this is a sexism in comics at the time. Like, she almost does. She sort of does. Like, well, they say, the
why haven't you? And she basically says, I'm too busy focusing on Themyscira and my role as an ambassador.
And, I mean, they kind of take pot shots at her. Fucking Adam has a lot to say, doesn't he? Like,
yeah, I'm just not a big fan of that character.
I can't stand Adam. He's such a fucking 70s, like, fucking leftover. Like, go back into a fucking phone line, Adam. That's what he used to do all the time. Like, you know, in the old landline phones, he'd go into the phone line and, like, you know, go back to the fucking where the next phone was coming from. This is stupid. Like, that was his big thing. So now he goes into the modems and does the same thing. It's like, oh, the same trick.
He's like just a worse Ant-Man.
Yeah, and because he's like a scientist, so we have to do his scientific explanation.
Yeah, he's just a worse Ant-Man.
Yeah, he is a worse Ant-Man, I agree. And Ant-Man I can't stand either, so it's like lame versus lame.
No, I don't mind Ant-Man.
I take Ant-Man over Atom.
Oh, I think everyone would.
But regardless, though, it felt like everyone had their chance to shine. Absolutely, I really like that scene. I'd forgotten how much I like it. The scene with Hawkgirl where she's going to leave because Hawkman's been killed years previously.
And they graffitied over his, like, memorial in the museum.
Yeah, and she's just about to leave and she's going to the spacecraft and then she looks back at the city on fire and she goes to help them all.
Yeah.
And the characters that are chasing them, they're not Superman, they're sort of like Bizarro clones, aren't they? They're graphs.
Well, they are. They're clones of the Kryptonian.
But imperfect ones.
Yeah, which is exactly what Bizarro is.
That's pretty cool. And so Luther is basically under the influence of Olsen. Is that right? Because he's...
Yeah. All the villains that you kind of know, including Joker, were under the influence of Olsen.
Joker was fucking intense.
Which is how they gave Joker...
Does Batman kill Joker?
Yes.
That's... Because they sort of like... They bury the lead a little. They say he does it, but I was looking for the scene where he really kills him, but he just strangles him, doesn't he?
Yeah, and it's the scene... You don't see him kill Joker.
Why did they not include that? But you see
him holding up the Joker's body by, like, the scruff of his...
Did you feel it was a bit cowardly not to include the killing scene? Seeing as, like, I noticed the camera panned away for Batman family's death and also for his killing the Joker. I felt like I would have preferred to have seen it. Like, why are we dancing on the topic? We're going to be so hard-hitting. Like, show it.
I don't know. I feel like if you're going to show it, it's got to be good enough to...
I thought it was robbed by not showing him there. Like,
no, because I feel like you can imagine something better than what they could draw.
But, dude, you know what I think of straight away? I think of Dark Knight Returns, where he chokes Joker out and snaps his neck. Although some people, Joe Wappo, over at Bruce Wayne's wall, will say that Joker snapped his own neck.
That's his. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So I think the idea is they let you imagine what you want to.
Fair enough.
However but he did brutal kill him. That may be.
He did kill him, though.
They do specifically say that he killed the Joker.
And to be fair, Batman was pushed over the edge big time.
Oh, yeah.
Like, fucking hurtling
over the edge. He had to watch Batgirl and Robin get electrocuted.
Oh, spoilers, Stu. I kept that from listeners.
Are you serious? You're going to have me go with that?
I said spoilers. The Bat family
at
died.
At this point.
Who was it? Batgirl and... They fucking didn't know what Robin. They were getting. And sadly for them, it was the really, like, the juvenile fucking version of those two characters, wasn't it? It was like the
60s. Oh, they were young teenagers, yeah.
It was like the 60s happy-go-lucky...
I thought I told you, cactus, I'm not a rapper. Can I live? I told you 96 that I came to take this shit, and I did. Handle my biz, I scramble like Randall with his. Cut in hand, but the only thing running is numbers, fam. Jigga held you down 6 summers, damn, where's the love? Niggas, where's the love? My nigga, where's the love?
Ain't no love in the heart of town.
Fuck.
Colour listeners, Dave here. Solo, riding solo, Jason Derulo style. Look, just in coming in because obviously I'm editing the show now, putting it together. We recorded last night. But when we were speaking last night, Stu and I did quite an extended debate right at the end of our discussion of The Nail, featuring Batman's sort of future after the book. And there was a fair, and I mean, Stu will blame me, and he's probably right. I think I accidentally hit the pause button on our discussion. So it was like about 5 minutes of spirited debate / banter. I just wanted to clue listeners in just to give them a picture because kind of like, you know, obviously email in with your ideas. Okay, so as Stu said, in The Nail, okay, in The Nail, Batman at a certain point has, after the Joker has killed, spoilers, Batgirl and Robin, he then kills the Joker. Okay, fine. The story goes on to resolve. Blah, blah, blah. Superman comes back at the end. And everything's kind of all right with the world. But then we have sort of a description of what goes on with the various different characters. Like, and so Lois is narrating this. And then I'll give the narration first and then the discussion. So she says, Batman surrendered himself to the Gotham City police and was tried for killing the Joker. The courts ruled the death was an act of war. Batman never forgave himself. He resigned from the JLA, and although he continues to fight crime, his crusade has become a self-imposed penance. Still, with Catwoman at his side, because he hooked up with Catwoman, perhaps his life is a little less dark now. And, I mean, Stu was just pretty much like, well, this just means that he no longer goes outside Gotham. Like, you know, he's just kind of like just punching the numbers now sort of thing. You know, he's tortured, blah, blah, blah. But then he has Catwoman, so his life's a little bit brighter. And my criticism, where I was coming from, which Stu was against, I just felt that was a cowardly act of storytelling. Like, firstly, the courts exonerate him. So he's exonerated by the courts, but he can't forgive himself. So he quits the JLA, okay, but then this is the bit that gets me. His crusade has become a self-imposed penance. I mean, I could argue that, like, various interpretations of Batman, it's always been that, because his parents died in the beginning. And then what I find even more annoying, that tries to make out like it's even more miserable. Like, if you thought he was miserable before, he's really miserable now. But then the addition of, still, with Catwoman at his side, perhaps his life is a little less dark now. I just don't understand what choice they're going for. Like, they want to give him a happily ever after, but they also want to, like, make out, like, I think Stuart's saying he's much more miserable, but I'm like, I can't decide from that narration what's going on. It's to me, it's poor storytelling. Is it minor in the context of the whole graphic novel? Yes. I mean, we're talking about a wrap-up at the end. They're trying to wrap a bow on it. It's an Oswald story. So I guess I'm not going to look too deeply into it. I just wanted, Stu's not here, but he had very much the opposite opinion of what I just said, and fair enough. I don't think it feels Stu explained himself very well, frankly, but, you know, he will say he did. So there's that. I just wanted to give listeners, seeing I'm editing the show now and about to post up, I wanted to put that in there for them. For that, and obviously, you know, you can write in and tell us who's right or wrong. And remember, who's your favourite host and who does all the jokes and all the editing? That's me. But also, I wanted to cover, we did briefly touch on Marvel Legacy, and we sort of didn't really bother to go into detail because it was none of the titles that any of us are interested in on this podcast. But some news has broken this morning when I was coming back to edit the show, and it's about Spider-Man, and Dan Slott sort of gave an interview where he's talking about how with Legacy in, I believe, November, Spider-Man, Amazing Spider-Man, will go back to, I believe, issue 789. I'm just trying to find it here. 789. Reverts back to classic numbering in September. Sorry, after September. So after September would be October, I guess. So 789, and apparently it's called the Fall of Parker storyline, in which Peter returns to the Daily Bugle in a mysterious capacity following the disappearance of Parker Industries. That's interesting. While Venom begins the Lethal Protector storyline that will pit everyone's favourite symbiote against fellow spider-villains like Kraven the Hunter. That's in the other title, which Mark Bagley, I believe, is drawing. And so they spoke to Slott and sort of tried to pin him down onto what's going on. And he's saying, this is a Peter Parker who's had it all, lost it all, and now has to find his place in the world again. It's a return to the scrappy underdog status that's the Peter Parker we all know and love. We're going to see a return to form with old friends coming back onto the stage, some in all new ways. And yada yada, it's been leading up to this, you know, through, you know, Big Time to Superior, through Spider-Verse and the Parker Industries era. It's been a crazy ride, but now that we're here, we're going to get a Peter slash Spider-Man that's closer to a core Spidey than we've had in years. I mean, that I like. Everything counts. Payoffs for long-time readers are coming, but the Marvel legacy of it all will make this a great jumping-on point for new readers or people who've just discovered Spider-Man in Homecoming. And apparently he's involved in the Bugle again. In Amazing Spider-Man, we're going to see the Daily Bugle and the Bugle cast come back in a big way, which I like. And no, it's not about Peter becoming a photographer again. It's a new twist. It's something we haven't seen in Amazing Spider-Man yet. After 55 years, that's a pretty cool trick, right? Yeah. Well, you know, we'll see. But, you know, all that said, I'm supportive. As a Spider-Man fan, and preferably I prefer my underdog, Peter Parker. Like, I do think that there is some truth to when you put him and make him a leader of Parker Industries and, like, a billionaire, I mean, it becomes more and more like a sort of Tony Stark light. I think it's inescapable. And more importantly than that, I think it's kind of not what Spider-Man is. Spider-Man can do well for himself, but he shouldn't be like the world conqueror. I mean, just being a leader of Parker Industries to me is boring. But that's just my opinion. I mean, my favourite Spider-Man is kind of that college kind of Spider-Man. And even when he gets happily married to Mary Jane, I dug that as well. So I don't know. I don't think he has to stay in high school, but I'm just not a fan of, like, the billionaire Peter Parker. To me, that's not really Peter Parker. That's kind of like an aberration and wish fulfillment by a writer. I don't think the greater audience is crying out for that. My favourite Spider-Man, for the record, and we'll do a whole issue of just Spidey at some point, is my favourite issue. I'm looking at the omnibus right now, is Roger Stern. I think Roger Stern fucking wrote the book on how to do Spider-Man. I've got his omnibus. It's great. I recommend it to anybody interested in Spider-Man and in good comics. It's honestly that good. Late 70s into the early 80s, just before Venom and all that. It's really, really good. So anyway, that's kind of me signing off. It's just Dave coming in for a bit of a cameo spot there, just clearing up the Batman issue at the end of the nail, and also a bit of Spidey chat. Okay, guys, back to your regular scheduled broadcast.
Yes, Stu, so we're over the three-hour mark again. It's been a long one. You're looking tired over there, big guy.
Yeah, it's been a long week.
Been a long week. And I mean, and I'm tiring. Let's face it.
You are. Yeah, it is tiring.
I'll take some blame. Yeah. I'll take some blame. Now, Stu, you have a comic that we're going to do next weekend for next week's show?
Yeah, another suggestion, seeing as you like this one.
We'll yeah, definitely.
Keep rolling with them.
Yeah, definitely.
We've got a bit of Thor for next week.
Thor. Is it it's more current Thor, isn't it? Or what was it again?
It's
in Jason. Jason Aaron. Got a thunder.
Beginning of his run.
Yep, great one.
Called the God Butcherer.
The God Butcherer. Okay, and I believe that's the first five issues.
Yep, one
so,
five.
Yeah, it's the Jason Aaron run, the one before Lady Thor. I think it ran for I forget how many, but around 30 issues. Really good run, and it's a really good start to the run as well.
Yeah, so we just picked up the first five.
Pick up the first five, get involved.
Get involved. Let us know what you think.
Let us know what you think. Write in. Obviously, any comments on Ra's al Ghul's cape? If you've read the blue or the green.
All the important issues.
Obviously, if any of you read the nail, I'd love to get your thoughts on where Batman was at the end of that. And your friend Stu, Tom, you want him to write in with something or other you wanted to write in?
Sure, if you want to give Dave any more ammo, just write in again.
Plenty. I mean, I feel like I've been hitting winners all night long. You know, just another night of just crushing the competition.
If any of my other friends want to write in and give Dave ammo against me, go, yeah.
All right.
Thanks, everyone.
Thank you so much for your time. We love you all. And obviously, follow Signal of Doom on Facebook. You can join up the Twitter as well. Obviously, my books are available. Des Moines Sulphite is out now. At Red Lantern 2051 is my Twitter handle. Stu, any parting thoughts? World peace? Going to happen over there anytime soon?
Not in the next week, but we'll keep our fingers crossed for the one after.
I feel like if I can get to the... If I can sort of win a few more of our debates, mate, it's probably send me over to the Middle East. Because you're tricky.
you're tricky with your bloody comments and your asides and, you know, you're doubting. And if I can get a few, if I can get like a week, say 3 weeks of solid victories over Stu, send me over to the Middle East. I could probably solve their problems.
I'd be happy for you to go to the Middle East.
Yeah, you just want me to go to the Middle East.
Yeah, if
straight into a Pfizer. It'd
be 3 weeks in a row. I'll be sending you there myself.
All right. Good night. We love you all. Bye-bye.
Bye.